Bible for the chief minister?
I wasn't for anybody to come in and teach this area of people that are unable to attend. I'm conscious of the fact that folks, I wasn't here, but how there's a minute silence to mark the passing of the friend of the United States, who was a member of this house for 5 years. I wasn't here then. I know that not much was said at the time, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to lead a tribute to a man who I think has kept everyone in the community in different ways and had friends across the political divide, as much as he had friends across all the divides that he might have represented. But it was the United States man who took positions in his right, but the fact that he took positions didn't stop him from being friends from the various United States opposite positions. And I ask that everyone is able to emulate. He's a man, as I said, in my public tribute, who lived many lives in the time that he was with us. A man who baptized us, who gave us communion, who married us, and who then led us in understanding political principles and then sport and did so much more. He is a man who will be very sadly missed across the political divide in Gibraltar, because we have strong friendships on both sides of this house and across the community, and that's what the representation commander from the United was.
I'd like to first of all start by appreciating myself for the words of the Honourable Leader of the House. So I'd also like to say this, that very often politicians talk about integrity and they talk about conviction. In my experience, looking at world politics, being inside the world politics, looking at world politics, these are rarely accurate description of many politicians out there, but I think that in relation to Vernon Unaris, rarely has there been a man with whom you could associate the words integrity and conviction. He's a great, great friend of mine. I will always cherish a note that he sent to me just before Christmas when he was in England about to receive treatment. And it will always remain one of my most cherished possessions. I think he's a sad, sad loss for this community. He's obviously a very sad loss for his family, but he's also a sad loss for his friends and his experience.
And it's been reported to me that I just recognize that Labour will be in touch amongst us. That is to be a source of sadness for all of us that we haven't been with us for 3 or 4 months as a part of the team.
Mr. Speaker, if I may really indulge in, I'm always present in the chamber today, MPs, members of staff, Parliament staff. Thank you all for the support you've shown me these last few months while I've been away due to medical reasons. I especially like to thank the Chief Minister and Government Ministers who have extended a hand of friendship during what has been a very difficult time for me, and to some extent still is a little difficult. I'd like to thank for that, extend love and compassion in my hour of need. Chief Minister has said in the past, it's about the issues and not about the man, and I think in this case the woman, and in that regard, your vision to that, I'm very grateful, and I want to thank you.
Answer the question. We announced that answer the question. We commend this question number 56, the Honourable Hugh Davidson.
What do you think? I'm a Minister for Economic Development, provide details of the companies which provide labour supply to the public sector, to include the number of the companies which do so, their names, and how many employees they are each currently today.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Economic Development and Telecommunications.
The companies supplying labour to the public sector are foreign, Mr. Speaker. UAE Limited 44, TS Limited 96, Rhinos in Section 98, Workforce 150, Rock Admin 28, Endus 43, WM Limited 11, S&K 90. Question number 57, the Honourable D. Davis. The Minister for Employment confirmed that all the services were carried out to the offices of the Employment Service in the financial year end of March 2013 have received the appropriate approval. The details of the contractors will be carried out as well. I'm sure the Honourable Minister for Economic Development and Telecommunications. Well, Mr. Speaker. Why not? Well, Mr. Speaker, because no work has been carried out in the employment service. I explain why this question arises, and it arises from the public auditor's report on page 17, which deals with expenditure arising from the Physical Improvement and Development Fund, Part 2, and with your permission, Mr. Speaker, I'll just read the relevant paragraph. And it deals with work and equipment, government buildings, work and structures. It says, I ask the principal secretary to Ministry of Employment and Labour whether these payments collected in the sampling exercise regarding the services work carried out to the offices of the employment services, which says here, I will let the Minister separate to that, by three contractors, the 19,346,000 have been financed in the garment procurement process of informatively, with an internal selected tendering process has been performed. The principal secretary has seen that director of employment, informing me that although the work predated the appointment of principal secretary, there have been various changes in exposition, he and the staff of the employment service could not take any relevant paperwork leading up to the work being approved. The financial secretary confirmed that authority was not put for the deficit to charge the cost of the work to the NDF, to the management of the effort, nor to dispense to the government official procurement purposes. And we are wanting to get permission from the Honourable Minister. The question was addressed to the Minister of Employment, and they were being resettled. But I suspect that it's the only Mr. Buffon who has information given that he's been opposed to the Minister of Relative Industry. So I want an explanation around the problem. Well, Mr. Speaker, I will go back to the person who was then the controlling officer of the department and find out what this work is about. I am not aware of any work that I've done in the office while I've been there. And Mr. Speaker, let me therefore accept that the answer gave me, the previous answer gave me, that the answer was no, because the work having been carried out in the office of the state is incorrect. And the basis of the principal law between description, it says the officers' work is carried out to the offices of the employment service by two contractors. On that basis, is there not a contradiction? And I'm given the opportunity to dispel any contradiction that may clearly be on the case of the word that I've just said and the answer just given. There is no contradiction. No work has been carried out while I've been there, and I'm not aware of what work they're referring to. So I'll investigate how they are apparently contracted to work with, as far as I'm concerned, have not taken place. Question number 58, the Honourable D. Davis.
Can the government state how many of the companies which have been admitted onto the approved list of government contractors have been incorporated since they came to office?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Economic Development and Telecommunications. Six, Mr. Speaker.
This question also arises as of a comment made again in the principal auditor's report, where, again, with your permission, I should simply read the numbers. But he says, the review also highlights disproportionate and informal
such procedures, whereby you quote extensively from the principle of the 34th. And I commend to honourable members of the future, perhaps in the main question, there should be a reference to a particular paragraph. Other than that, what the House can do, of course, is to debate the principle of the 34th, which was a feature of life in the House of Assembly in days gone by. You know, we cannot have a position whereby you are quoting at the end from the principle of the 34th, paragraph after paragraph. But I am allowing that the efficacy is a justification by which I write it. Okay?
Speaker, I'm grateful for that. The only concern I have is the premise in which the comment is made, and this one is this. First of all, this is an extensive quote from the report, and it needs to be quoted a few lines. And I think I'm more than entitled to proceed in the way that I proceeded this morning in the future. But I will take on board what the chair has said, so if you could, by doing so, I'm not necessarily agreeing with that is the way that I will be proceeding in the future. Speaker, this is not an extensive quoting of the report. It's simply a quotation based arising from the answers of the Honourable Minister and I guess.
The Honourable Member will appreciate that if he wants to get a fuller answer, if the Minister who is answering the question knows what the subject matter is going to be, he can give a much fuller and a much more accurate answer.
You need to keep on that it's clearly an answer for the relevant member of the question. Speaker, paragraph 2.68 says that the review also highlighted a vast number of tenders which have not been tendered to the damage procurement service but directed to the construction industry to improve schemes for garment competitive imagery with significance. That the team is created in August 2010 during our time with a purpose of attempting to aid the local construction industry in order to achieve flexibility in the allocation of contracts to register contractors who meet a set of terms and conditions. However, Mr. Speaker, the number of contractors in the approved list of garment contractors has risen from 53 in June 2012 to 185 in March 2014. And in that context, and he's answered the specific question as well, because he really like a very 46 had been incorporated during his term in office. So can you give this slide an explanation as to why there has been such a massive increase from the figure of 53 in June 2012 the current figure, or the March 2014 figure, of 185.
Okay, so the original question is how many companies that are currently on the list were incorporated after we came into office, and I've given him that figure. He then asked me for something else that is nothing to do with the services that I've given him, but what do I think about something that the audience deserves? Well, if you have asked me, that is the original question, and then I would have brought an explanation for him. Question number 59, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Let me try and make it easier for the Honourable Gentleman in the supplementary that I'm going to ask, because he has answered that there's been 46 new construction companies that are in the approved construction list. That means that even in those numbers, 53 that were there when we were there, another 46 in 3 years, that's double. That's much more. 185 is the number at the moment. Can you give an explanation as to why we've seen this a significant increase in the number of construction companies that are now in the approved construction list?
Well, Mr. Speaker, we are more than one of the answers to that question already. Because if you're asking me questions about the companies that were incorporated from people who were previously unemployed and who went to that small company in order to be able to compete for government work. And the bulk of this 46 companies are one-man companies, one-man outfit.
Mr. Speaker, the approved contractors list, part of the criteria for coming onto the approved contractors list is also experience as well, experience to deal with the job. And there are different when we were there, certainly, my recollection is
that there were limits in for example, any contract below, I think it was $500,000, you require X number of experience, X number of years practicing in that particular area, the construction company. Then over $1 million, so the experienced company would obviously do the more complicated job because at the end of the day, it's a quality issue. But who would be brought in a team in companies, such as, for example, BBB, which is a company that was incorporated a year and a half ago, that is awarded a £1.5 million contract? How did the honourable gentleman justify that? I justified on the basis that I justified the one who said there was a matter. It was a last tender. This is people with respect, but that is not the question. I really decide whether it was or it wasn't the lowest tender. It's about quality too, and it's about experience to do a job. And if you have a construction company that's been incorporated a year, that has been incorporated a year and a half ago, and in a year and a half, it gets a substantial contract of $1.5 million, surely, there is a quality issue there. Is it satisfied that the quality of job done by companies that have been recently incorporated, getting these very substantial contracts, the quality is being retained? I think I am satisfied of the people who do the work for me are satisfied, but that is okay. And I am also one of the construction experts. So, people have the qualifications, the quality threshold for coming onto the approved contractors list and for being able to do these substantial contracts. At that stage, between when we were in government to when they, to them taking over, because quite frankly, I cannot remember when we were in government, and I have some involvement in relation to this, that I can't remember that we should ever, that in our time, we should ever have a situation where a company that's only been there for a year and a half since its corporation gets a contract for £1.5 million. I certainly do not want to emulate the record of success in the construction industry. So therefore, I am not going to look to his work to see what we should be doing now. But I can tell the honourable member that when I asked about the list that we talked about with the first place, that list has been out of date for 10 years out of the 15 that they were there, according to the people in the technical services, and included at least 6 companies that have gone back and disappeared from the scene and were still on that list. But if you do that, if you and I want to tomorrow incorporate a construction company, if you are saying to me that in a year's time you'd be perfectly entitled to be allocated contract for £1.5 million, or with our membership of the DSD, does it count against that? Think of the membership of the DSD will not count against him, but I would think that it's those in the 46 that were originally DSD will by now have changed their voting pattern, given the effect they were constantly being submitted to since they left the unemployment list. But I would welcome if they both decide to devote their energy to construction because they are doing the right thing for politics. Question number 59, the Honourable E.J. Harris.
Mr. Speaker, to the answer provided with question number 757 of 2014, can the Minister for Training provide a breakdown of the 11 sectors currently delivering training at A, the construction training centre, and B, the engineering training centre, indicating the number of instructors that have been training to each individual discipline of course, showing at which training centre they are based, together with details of each individual instructor qualification level.
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Economic Development and Telecommunications.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with 60 to 64. Question Question number 15, the Honourable Peter Hayes.
To the answer provided to question number 765 of 2014, can the Minister for Training provide details in respect to the 11 officials indicating how many are based at A, construction trade training centre, B, engineering trade training centre, together with details of each individual and extra qualification?
Question number 61, the Honourable Peter Hayes.
To the answer provided to question number 767 of 2014, can the Minister for Training say in which company the non-government employee instructor is employed?
Question number 62, the Honourable Peter Hayes.
To the answer provided to question number 768 of 2014, can the Minister for Training please provide a breakdown of the individual and specific NDC levels the 134 trainees of current employees, broken down by discipline or course, together with details of the examination board and its qualification awarding body to certify the qualification of trainees?
Question number 53, the Honourable Peter Hayes.
Further on to the answer provided to question number 766 of 2013, can the Minister for Training provide a breakdown of details of the specific NDCs, sharing the individual corresponding levels, the 74 trainees accounting the 50, indicating, of course, that indicating the discipline, of course, in the following, the examination board and awarding body who will, upon successful completion, certify the award, as well as indicating at which training center they are enrolled.
Question number 64, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Training provide details of any new trainees enrolled at either A, construction trade training centre, B, engineering trade training centre, since the answer provided in question number 766 of 2014, indicating the specific discipline of course being followed, indicating at what level, the examination board and awarding body who will, upon successful completion, certify the award, as well as stating at which training centre they are enrolled.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Economic Development and Telecommunications.
Mr. Speaker, there are eight instructors in the construction training centre. Two are delivering carpentry training at the level NDQ3. One is delivering painting and decorating training up to level NDQ2, and one up to NDQ level 3. One instructor is delivering plumbing up to NDQ level 2, and three are delivering training in bricklaying, plastering, wall and floor tiling up to NDQ level 3. All instructors have qualifications in the CITB. Approved on the second day. There are three instructors in the engineering training centre, one of which is employed by JIPTEC, delivering training in mechanical analytical engineering and fabrication and welding at the NDQ level 3. There are eight instructors at the construction training centre with lead body qualifications, CTNG, D32, D33, and EAL 8 units, and three instructors at the Engineering Training Center, who possess the EAL award in assessing competence in the work environment level 3, and one is in the process of training. The qualifications obtained by the trainees are as follows. Awarding body CTNG, carpentry level 1, serving trainees and level 2, 4 trainees. Planning level 2, 1 trainee. Bricklaying level 1, 2 trainees. Level 2, 3 trainees. Clustering, level 2, 2 trainees. Tiling, level 2, 1 trainee. Painting and decorating, level 1, 7 trainees. Combined brickwork, clustering and tiling, level 1, 76 trainees. Awarding body, EAL, fabrication and welding, electrical engineering, level 3, both trainees. Mechanical engineering, level 3, 2 trainees. Construction training center. a combined bricklaying cluster and tiling level 1 city and grid, 17 trainees. The city and grid carpentry level 3 trainees and level 3, 4 trainees. Bricklaying level 2, 5 trainees. Clustering level 2, 5 trainees. Tiling level 2, 2 trainees. In the engineering training center, during ERL, fabrication and welding level 2, there are 4 trainees. Level 3, 4 trainees. Mechanical engineering level 3, 7 trainees. Electrical installation level 3, 16 trainees. Motor vehicle mechanics level 2, 8 trainees. There have been no enrollment since the answer to question 766 of 2014. I can arrange for the Honourable Member to receive a photocopy of each of these readings for citizen unless he specifies with a main answer. Okay, this is all the normal rules we arrange for that to be done. In the meantime, this is a very popular information and very grateful for the Liberta. Can I just clarify one thing that may be very significant for the next week? When you say that there's been a change in the answer we gave to my Honourable colleague for question 766, because there's been no new training, perhaps that could have used a better language. The answer is that the trainees who are at level 2 are people who are continuing in level 1 and the ones at level 3 are continuing. So the only thing that was, I am told by the training center, which is when they first enter and they don't need to be enrolled to continue in level 2 and level 3. And indeed, in the case of the construction sector, they spend time in the industry and then they can come back and continue. So, but that is, we don't treat that as a new enrollment, but as a continuation of the previous one. Yes, this is an, I think it's very fair. I require for the details, I'm coming back to the minister. I thank for being able to produce for the figures. What gender is, you know, if I give you a hypothetical example, if 20 trainees compete at level 1, how many of those 20 risk to move on and actually play with level 2? But perhaps the Minister may know about this information. I believe in some of the training assessments that despite those in the construction phase receiving qualified construction and safety and completion at level 2, there seems to be a desire by 3, 4, maybe half a dozen of them to continue on to level 3, for which the training center in the past has tried to accommodate them. Does the minister have any information to offer to the site whether they are allowing them, despite that they need to spend some of time out in the industry? I think the formation district has set by the information board. But is there another policy willing to, because of intelligence ministers, to come in with the conversation? So the sake of those not to invest in the existing receipt. If I can go to our education system, it's a fast-running construction phase, a qualifying phase of level 2, to continue to level 3 would be the equivalent of us coming in the education world, like post-graduate public studies. So it's something that's been open and doesn't have anything.
Well, it's not something that we encourage, because the whole purpose of the training is that we want to get people replacing classrooms that are currently important. And therefore, as you rightly said, going on to level 3 is really in order to be taking on more of the level more of a classroom or a foreman and a supervisor. And I think, frankly, it's not the best thing to come straight out of training and go in the law without having experience from working in the industry. So for those who want to do the level 3 work, we're saying, and there are many of them, is that they should go into the industry and get their release, and we will enter into an agreement with the employer
so that when they need to get ready to carry on with their level 3 studies, that will be funded by the training program, so that the employer will not be, if you like, hostile to the idea of releasing people, because it won't be at the expense of the employer.
The people in the original thank you to the minister, that I think that sounds extremely sensible. And I think last thing is, thank you for this type of commitment. And we can also say that I support that we're not only training people to fill up the type of vacancies that we're right now, but we are sort of looking forward towards a successful succession planning, one has to call it that, so that in a few years' time, there's a management that will be no longer a need to enforce, you know, any way that we take over to political roles. We are talking about the managers of the future and trying them the way. So the minister can come and from the support of this level of in the sector continuing after the issue.
Speaker, if we are able to continue to attract people into the construction industry, eventually we will see a significant move, but we are still at the early stages of that transition. Next question number 65. Question number 65, the Honourable D.A. Keaton. The Speaker, can the Chief Minister please state what the government's cash reserves were as at the 31st of August 2014? 30th of September 2014, 31st of October 2014, 30th of November 2014, and 31st of December 2014. Answer the Honourable Minister for Economic Development and Telecommunications. Speaker, I will answer this question with question 66 to 74. Can you please give a breakdown by bank in amount of that part of the aggregate public debt that comprises bank debt as at the 31st of December 2014? Question number 67, the Honourable D.A. Keaton. Can you please provide a chart of a breakdown by the venture issue of that part of the aggregate public debt which comprises only the debentures as at the 31st of December 2014? Question number 68, the Honourable D.A. Keaton. Can the Chief Minister please provide details of the value of the Volta Savings Bank debentures or other debt securities as at the 31st of December 2014? Question number 69, the Honourable D.A. Keaton. Can the Chief Minister please provide a breakdown of where and how all the money deposited in the Volta Savings Bank have been invested and the rate of return on each of these investments as at the 31st of December 2014? Question number 70, the Honourable D.A. Keaton.
Can the Minister for Finance state how the funds proposed for the purchase by the government of the shareholders of telecom previously owned by the third party were sourced?
Question number 71, the Honourable D.A. Keaton. I can the Minister please provide details of A, the date of date when Credit Finance Company Limited deposited money with the Volta Investment Holdings Limited, B, the amounts involved on each such occasion, C, the bank and bank account from where the money was transferred in the name of Credit Finance, D, to the bank and bank account in the name of credit of the Volta Investment Holdings Limited. Question number 72, the Honourable D.A. Keaton. Can the government please provide the exact terms in which Credit Finance Company Limited has deposited the sum of $347 million in Gibraltar Investment Holdings Limited and whether all the directors of Credit Finance approved that transaction? Question number 73, the Honourable D.A. Keaton. Can the Minister please provide details of all monies deposited or investments made by the Gibraltar government in Gibraltar Investment Holdings Limited over the last calendar year, together with the date and details of bank and bank accounts into which the money was deposited? Question number 74 of the Honourable D.A. Keaton. Please provide details of all investments and transfers of money made out of the Voice Investment Holdings Limited over the last calendar year, including the identity of the recipient. I am the Honourable Minister for Economic Development and Telecommunications.
As of the 31st of December 2014, the aggregate public debt consisted of bank debt for partially fund 150 million, NatWest Offshore Limited 50 million. The government debentures were not here today, whereas 2017, the bank debt 15,061,200 pounds, and 1 month debenture 437,154,400 pounds. The value of the Voice of Savings Bank debentures in our debt maturity by date was 1,027,929,700 pounds. 250 debentures, 33,770,000 pounds, 300 pounds. 2016, 22,935,600 pounds. 2017, 178,983,600 pounds. 2018, 163,997,100 pounds. 2019, 125,110,100 pounds. Other debentures, 13,889,559 pounds. Bonds, 104,491,469 pounds. Deposit accounts, 237,618,605 pounds. The earnings here in respect of different categories of investment, vehicles held by the savings bank fund for the month of November are as follows. On-call accounts with the Bank of England, the Crown Agents and the Deposit Bank had an average yield of around 0.32%. The Deposit Bank led the Royal Bank of Scotland, Barclays Bank, NatWest, Ulster Bank and Lloyds Bank. Floating rates now quoted in the London Stock Exchange with an average yield of 0.95%. The floating rates were issued by the following: European Investment Bank, International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, Netherlands Dutch Bank, KfW, Republic of Finland Bank, Volkswagen Financial Services, Dexia, GC Capital, UK, Westpac Securities, Australia New Zealand Bank Group, Central Cap, PLC, AFD Finance Limited, Royal Bank of Canada, BG Energy Capital PLC, Stanford, Medway Limited, BMW Finance, and National Grid Gas PLC. Monthly income debentures are a 6% return and preference shares in credit finance had an average dividend of 5.6%. As previously explained, quoted stock and sale accounts fluctuate marginally on a daily basis, but these fluctuations are not considered significant. I now hand over to the members the savings bank statement listing the investment as of November 2013. The funds of credit finance are invested in communication, obtaining, financing, and loans, which provides a profitable return and a balance return in all four accounts which have been explained in answer to supplementaries in previous questions on this topic. I am not prepared to provide any further details beyond what has been provided. The money held by DIA and its subsidiaries are managed collectively together with government reserves by the Treasury in order to meet day-to-day needs in cash flow movement. The cash reserve in the month requested were as follows. August 14, 79,057,000. September 96, 84.
October 1972, November 84-65, and December 67.
Mr. Speaker, may I afford the honourable gentleman an opportunity to answer some of the questions that he's just asked in his voting with these questions? He hasn't answered question 65, which is the cash reserve. I haven't heard him answer that. The cash reserve, he knows that I need the cash reserve in order to calculate net debt. He hasn't answered the question that Mr. Bettino has asked about Greek telephone. I know this is where I can answer the questions on the Vault Investment Holdings Limited, but I assume that without answering related to that, he doesn't want to provide me any further information, and the information he's already provided me. But at the very least, in relation to questions, before I come back on the other matters I want to ask supplementary on, 55 and also 70. I apologize, I think the people have been putting this together for many long years. I've put it down for supplementary, I want to put it back to the other one. The investment was made by the Gibraltar Savings Bank Fund in the purchase of the Greek Telecom shareholding, and that is reflected in the list of investments that are discussed over to the honorable members. So, but I should have mentioned it. I did give the figures for the cash reserve, but I repeat them, which was August 79,057,000, September 96,084,000, October 90,720,000, November 84,000,000. 0.65 and December 60,000,001. Yes.
I have other things on the table that you've met, but that was the money that's going to be brought to investment holdings that had been held as cash for the use of the city, and that was the amount of the money that had been held as at those months had been, then that's my understanding. I don't know if you can confirm that my understanding is wrong, and that was the, what you should have been given is that 100 shares.
The figure that I have given in for the month of August, September, October, November, and December, I mentioned to question 65, and now the government has to say. So, Mr. Speaker, the net debt as at the end of December was the gross debt 452, less cash reserve at the end of December, which gives a net debt of £394 million. Is that being the same as I think we must have that as one of the supplementary calculations along with the government has? Well, but still £392. The net debt is effectively even higher than the net debt that the Honourable Chief Minister announced to this House of £352 million during the budget. The trend of increase in net debt, we have cash reserves which are just simply 60 million. How does the government intend to keep its manifesto commitment of actually cutting the public debt in half in the light of these figures?
Well, Speaker, I don't think that he should explain to the honourable member how I intend to complete any manifesto in commitment. The point is that we intend to do it. And therefore, I don't recall in the 40 years But this year, anybody ever expected to be better, they were not going to be able to do something they were committed to do. They just said they were going to do it. Give the same advice.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I wait with bated breath. So, Mr. Speaker, the tax reserve of £60 million, and with a government that very recently signed a contract for the construction of a power station at £77 million. How did you get the intent? How did the honourable gentleman, the government, intend to be funding the power station with tax reserve of £60 million, and the position as he has described it very well, Mr. Speaker?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't recall that it was him in government when he was intending to spend twice that much, like £120 million, to put one up the hook. So presumably, if he had a scheme at his sleeve which he didn't really tell him again, I'm sure a bunch of people imitated what he was doing at the time.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's very simple. I think he has been this government and his party have been lying back to us about the fact that we would have needed to borrow money. Now, I am asking him to come clean. We have brought a potential bill to this community of £77 million. Indeed, over the next few weeks, I will be demonstrating that bill is going to be increasing to over £140 million. That is the real cost of the power station, and I just simply want to know how the government is going to fund it. Is the government, for example, going to fund it via credit, the money that credit sitting in credit funds now actually sitting in Gibraltar Investment Holdings Limited, as indeed, from the answer he's given, my honourable friend, Mr. Latino, he appears to have funded the purchase of the shareholders in Gibraltar Investment funded out of the Gibraltar Savings Bank. And of course, if that is the case, then I do have a supplementary that I wish to ask the honourable gentleman, as you no doubt can predict.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm not going to tell him. I'm not going to tell him. But I can tell him that given the nomenclature, because the word he used to the last time, given the nomenclature introduced by the pharmacy minister, I think it falls into the category of either being hypothetical or what is crazy. Number two. I can tell you that as far as the investment, as far as the investment in the Bolsa Telecom shares, the fulfillment, I think the thing that is extended is, and is known, the Gibraltar Savings Bank has bought from Slovenia Telecom their 50% shareholding, which is yielding Slovenia 8%. It's a good return and a safe investment, and it's been bought at a price, I can tell members of the office, which is a very good price, because my information is that the previous administration had a valuation done in 2008, which put the value of this 50% shareholding at £40 million. So look, if it was valued independently, professionally, for the previous government at £40 million in 2008, and we'd be able to negotiate a buyout of our partner, what I expect is that the savings bank will continue with that investment until we find a suitable partner to replace Slovenia. But I anticipate that in the time that we continue to hold those shares, we will be taking steps to improve the profitability of and consequently the value of those shares. So when we come to resolve it, there will be a capital gain to the savings bank. So that is the rationale of that investment. Well, Mr. Speaker, is there not an alternative rationale? It means that the government has been spending so much money, has been borrowing so much money, that actually there's nothing in the coffers, in the kitchen, to be able
to purchase those shares. It would not have been possible for the government to have purchased the shares in the telecom. It simply would have been impossible. Taking into account the cost of those that the government has, and indeed the formula about how much the government can borrow, isn't that the position?
Well, no, he's wrong. I mean, although the former part of the government that invented the formula, it is clear that he doesn't understand it as well as I do. The formula would allow us to have net debt of 443 million. So, if we had chosen to go to the maximum allowed by the formula, the results would have been dropped to something like 17 million. And we would still have been able to take it ourselves. But the decision was a deliberate decision that the savings bank would be given the opportunity to invest because it provides a good return and money that rather than having invested somewhere else with a lower return, as the minister responsible for the savings bank, I did for sales because of a very lucrative source of funding for us to be able to increase the profitability of the savings bank at the same time. So we've got, you know, an income stream now coming into the savings bank at 8%, which is very good, above anything we are paying out. And at the same time, as I said, I expect that it will be possible to improve the value of those shares and to sell them at for more than we bought them.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I sincerely hope that it turns out to be a wonderful investment to the savings bank. A little bit of liquid for a bank, but nevertheless, I think it's a very good investment, and I'm sure it will be. But given that the investment has been made by the savings bank, which is not the government, and not by the government, would the Honourable Member agree with me that all the government's public statements to the effect that it has to apply to the telecom are factually incorrect?
I agree with the Honourable Member that technically he's right, but it has been bought by the savings bank, which is in itself owned by the government. So, you know, if the government had chosen to use a government company to buy it as opposed to the savings bank, presumably it would have not been a major detractor from accuracy to say the government owns all the shares. But I think it would be preferable that all the shares would not have been held by the consolidated fund, which would have been incorrect. 100% accurate interpretation of the statement of the government reported.
Well, the savings bank is owned by the government in an enormous sense of that word. It's a statutory body, it's statutory business, it is managed by the savings, it is overseen by an auditor, but of course it is not the government. It is invested into a government department, it is not the share that owns the asset. It's effectively the as a savings and director of the deposit group at the savings bank, which is now one of the assets that comes through for their deposit in due course. So it would have been, I think, more transparent for the government statement to have said what the Honourable Member has said today. It seems that I would have accepted anything from the statement, but it would have been absolutely correct. It
would have been a more accurate description of what has been done.
Even if the Honourable Gentleman is right, and I have calculated that in the formula, and not just the government could borrow, and the formula for how much the government could borrow, and not just slightly below or below the 443, you are still, had the government bought the shares in Bank Telecom directly, the government would have been within less than £20 million from that borrowing that ceiling. Now, isn't it the case that really what the government is doing here is it's using the divorce of savings bank as a form of borrowing which it doesn't have to, which is not going to be caught by the legal borrowing limit, because the government really doesn't have the money to then fund all the other things that the government is going to be funding, including a power station. Because if the legal borrowing limit is 443, And had these shares been bought by the government, it would have taken them within £20 million, slightly less, I think the calculation is, of that actual scheme. It would not have had money to then pay for the power station, it would not have had money to pay for the small birth, which the Honourable Minister Hester is responsible for, etc., etc., etc. And that is at the heart of the problem that this government is facing, which is that it has promised so many things to so many people, funded by very high borrowing, that it really does not have the money to fund its long list of commitments, hence why it effectively needs to rely on savings money and the devoted savings fund.
Well, I know that the 60 honourable members who took an interpretation on it, and no doubt she will either address us and do another YouTube thing on it, or maybe do this is quite a lot of paper to put to my letterbox. But I'm afraid the fact that it does that, which I think is misrepresenting reality like he's doing now, is something that would really upset me very much, because the day you put this little paper to my letterbox, explaining why people shouldn't check the savings bank in the hospital, when I got to my office, there was a telephone call from somebody that wanted to know how they could go about putting $1.5 million in. So I was really want to encourage him to keep on doing this thing, because it seems to be getting people to put more money in than I'm able to do with my own effort. This is a really serious issue affecting people. And look, everybody in their political careers learns from people that they've observed in politics, and I've observed him for a very, very long time. One of the things that I took from his, one of the things that he, the piece that I took from the Honourable Gentleman, is his economic philosophy, which was always within the room and always said something, leave something aside, so that if the going gets tough, the board has something there that it can rely on, and so that we are not vulnerable to future threats. We have a situation here where the net debt is the highest in history, where we are within, on this calculation, £47 million of the net debt limit, of the government's borrow. The government cannot borrow more on these figures, and £47 million more, and yet the government has huge commitments, power stations, the birth, other commitments, the bills, the final bills in relation to the flooding of the estate, that hasn't come through yet. The affordable homes, of all people, the architect of the rainy day fund policy, that this is jeopardizing the future of children and children's children. Because the only way that this can continue is if everything goes Gibraltar's way. And if I were in a board of a company and a CEO of that company were to say to me, my policy is that this company has always done well, and therefore it's going to continue to do well without laying out a plan as to how it's going to continue to do well, I'd wait for discussion tomorrow. And you see, the problem that I have, Mr. Speaker, and I'm asking whether there's a comment on this, the problem that I have is that this appears to be government policy where everything's gone well in the past, it has continued to go well. And yet, I would have thought that he, of all people, would have understood the danger of government policy and what the government is doing here.
The Honourable Minister of Justice, I have allowed the legal representation of Texas to make a political speech and not to ask a question. I hope that you don't have a repetition.
I'm glad, Mr. Speaker, that the Honourable Member has said that that is something that he pays a lot of attention to, because I still believe it's absolutely essential for us
to think of a system and not live just for the day. And indeed, I think it's important that we should not compete with each other in doing things that may be short-term benefits and long-term benefits. And the honorable member will know that in my history, both of one of the things that I mentioned was the slogan of the GSIT manifesto in 1988, which surprised a lot of people, that the social partnership is there, you cannot spend money before you make it. That is still my view. I think there is a problem in getting people to stick to the amount that are intended to defend when we bring an appropriation bill to the House and approve it. I think Thomas' minister has that problem at one stage and tried to see if it could be corrected by the Secretary of State must be emailed with the figure. And I think at the time that he did that, I said to him that the problem in my view was not in the government department where there are civil servants and controlling officers in our own tradition of considering that it's wrong to spend more. Since then, it started, I think, in their term and has continued till now, to the agencies and authorities and maybe they got their individuals who seem to think that approving variations on original prices so that the money that was intended to cover several projects now is set to the limit is perfectly permissible. I can tell the honorable member that given that we've now brought the level of unemployment down to the level that we both think is desirable and attainable, which is below the 300 mark. My colleague will be ensuring that it stays in that region. And I, with my new responsibilities, will be taking a much greater role in ensuring that philosophy, which he subscribes to, and so do I, is reflected in the way we manage it.
Well, let me say, Mr. Speaker, that we have been political opponents now for the last 14 years, despite our closeness in the past. Let me say, without hesitation, that I feel far more comfortable with the honourable gentleman in the government benches, and I hope that he remains as a voice of caution in the management of our public debt for many years to come. Because the reality is that what he has said, and also what I know what he hasn't said, but I know that he subscribes to too, makes a lot of sense. And the reality is that in an uncertain world, and increasingly we know that we live in an uncertain world, that we need to live within our means, and we cannot have every 4 years auctioning as to who pays more on both sides. And I really do believe that, and I really do hope that the honourable gentleman remains there for many, many years. But may I now deal with something that I don't agree with the honourable gentleman? All that money that consisted from credit finance to devote to investment holding limited. And I know that he's not providing us any information in relation to that, but he did say that I took a note of this. He said that the money is cash flow movement within government companies, if you use that phrase. That means, therefore, that effectively that $347 million, which is the $430 million in credit finance, $430 million in the savings bank, $30 million in the government, less the $82 million, $347 million. That $347 million has effectively been part in the Growth Investment Holding Limited, and it's being used as cash flow for the government group of wholly owned companies. Is that my understanding correct in relation to that?
This is the case before 2011.
Yes, from the speaker, there is one, you know, there is one important difference here. The government-owned companies, when we were in government, were funded out of the control of the fund. In other words, it was a taxpayer that funded government-owned companies, and for people listening, it's not only the funding of the government companies, it's the funding of their projects. So, for example, BJBS, who formed part of that network of companies, would be at project, and the government of the past would fund not only BJBS, their wages, but also the projects undertaken by BJBS. Now, if that 347 million is being used in the same way as we would, inject a piece in these pensions to the consolidated fund, effectively, is it not the case that the government is not only funding through the savings bank this network of companies, but also their projects, including projects by the UBS?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I know what the honourable member is trying to do is to get me to tell him what I told him I would not tell him. I know that. What I can tell him is the only thing I could also tell him, which is that the system of using the fees collectively from all sources and having that control centrally by the Treasury was the answer that was given to me when I asked the question how this was being done, and that is the answer that I'm giving him now. And he can speculate as to what the implications were of that, which is what I used to do when I got the answer. We now move to question number one.
Stephen, let me just say this is my question, which relates to the superintendent. Is he able to tell the client who carried out the evaluation and whether any due diligence was committed, because the due diligence had a relation to that superintendent? But is he able to provide the client who actually carried out the evaluation of it? Some reports given to the press, I think some development interesting. The purchase value was at 58 million euros. I think I'm taking the correction.
Well, there was, I can't remember the name of the entity that did it, but I can tell you an honorable member of Slovenia did their own valuation, and Gipsy did its own valuation. I mean, remember this is before I became a shareholder of this day, a savings bank. But I did form part of the delegation that went to Slovenia to discuss the issues with the Slovenians. And in fact, we actually negotiated a price which was at the bottom range of those valuations. For very particular circumstances. The background to this, Mr. Speaker, is that the civilian group, which was state-owned, was required by the EU to have to be privatized because Slovenia needed EU bailout. And it so happened that the although the Gibraltar investment in a group that was at one stage valued at something like 2 billion euros in the Louisiana stock exchange, the Gibraltar actually was the most, if not the only profitable bit of the Amoran power. So there was an element yesterday from the account that they provided me with that was clear. So they thought they could get better value by selling us the profitable bit which we were interested in buying, rather than by selling the whole thing where the
the voice of prophets of Gibraltar was lost against the background of a lot of events in Croatia, Albania, and all the other places where they were. So it was in their interest to buy, and therefore I think we got a better price than we might have otherwise done. But the price was within the parameters of the valuations that have been done, but their eagerness to sell before the whole group went on sale meant that on the basis that they could do the sale quickly and that they would get cheap, and the only reason why it was delayed in fact was because they wanted to get the dividend that was due in the second half of 2014, as well as the payment for the shares, and we were not able to persuade them to forego that dividend, so they stuck out until the dividend was due. But that is the reason for the price and the timing. It was released when it had been done independently with somebody that did it for them and somebody that did it for Gibson. And in the first negotiation, what we had, if you like, a very keen seller as well as an interest in buying, partly because it was a very good return, secondly because in my judgment we can get a better price than what we paid, especially if we, before we put it back on the market, we think to improve the return, and thirdly because with the group being put on the market, we will never have known who we might finish up as a subsidiary of, which is not a very good situation. So that's really the background. You can see that in terms of selling it back onto the market, at the beginning of the value of the people, we're selling about 5 million shares in the US per year. And the reason why I asked the people to call, I don't have a copy of the article here, but I think the people who are aware of this is also serving a recent thinking that he had many, I think, thinking he gave us a number, and many investors who were interested. And in terms of this, I think this is a bit of a contradiction in terms of the approach. I get the impression, and I certainly do recall this when I think the first question to this advisor was relevant, that the intention was to take control now, to therefore control who the next kind of sector partner would be, but that as quickly as possible, as quickly as reasonably possible, the government, as I turned out the only information that we had, the government was very interested to sell that shareholding back into the private sector. But as I say, from the explanations which the answer to which the member has given this morning, that his approach seems to be different. He's going and he wants to make a profit out of it, and then in time, when he thinks that the timing is correct, he will then sell on to a third party private sector bidder. Is that analysis correct?
From the point of the savings bank, this is a good investment. We are in no rush to sell it. So we believe that we can sell it profitably, and we believe that if certain things are done with Gibson, the price that we can get is going to be even higher. So obviously, the government doesn't need this money back as a government because it's not the government that put the money in. The savings bank is putting it in. The savings bank, I as a minister responsible for the savings bank, believe that, a time scale of within a year would not be a long term investment. We look at the portfolio that have given a breakdown in terms of the maturity, then in fact, the bank of the money that we've got in the savings bank is more than 12 months money. And therefore, the bulk of the money that is coming in is predominantly in 3 year and 5 year maturity. So the savings bank itself is attracting funds which are in for more than 1 year, and I would think that 1 year would be more of a sufficient time to achieve the kind of target that I think are possible to achieve. But of course, if somebody comes back tomorrow where they can divide and they get a very good price, we would reconsider the situation. But it's not what we are. We have a desperate need to sell this because we need to use the money for somebody else or someone else because we have not this own money. If we have this own money, we might have been in that situation. But given that it is an investment by the savings bank, the savings bank is getting a sound return.
Question number one, the Honourable DJ Rafini.
Can the Minister for Employment state whether he has any intention of employing a permanent chairman to the Investment Tribunal?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Business and Employment.
Mr. Speaker, I can answer this question together with question number two of 2015.
Question number two, the Honourable DJ Rafini.
Can the Minister for Employment state to when he expects he will have completed the promised reforms to the Investment Tribunal procedures?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Business and Employment.
Mr. Speaker, at present, we are considering the long-term sustainability of appointing a full-time chairperson against the stability of the economy of the current system and appointing a full-time person in power. This proposal is that all the reforms will be completed before the summer.
Is it the government may change the position in relation to the permanency of that position? You may recall that when I asked the Honourable Minister for Employment, back in March 2014, question 232, I asked him that particular question, and I asked him when it was going to happen, and he was very forthright in his answer to say it will happen before the next general election, Mr. Speaker. But can you confirm that actually he will not be held to that, and that he may be considering going down another route, which is to have basically the system that we had before, where you draw people from the mechanics, basically?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman is correct. The intention is to reform the entirety of the Investment Tribunal system before the summer, where it is before the general election, after the election, time in the House of the Board, where the court election before then. But I do think it takes much of the sufficient time to be able to consider the different proposals that have been sought from the Bar Council and the Union and the Chamber of Commerce and the SSC. They will be writing to me hopefully by the end of February. In the meantime, I know the event needs to be liaising with the Bank Council and the Law Firm to explain that I have received a letter from them where I speak chairpersons, or rather lawyers, wishing to be appointed chairpersons in employment cases. I'm sure I would be happy to know that from the 32 existing cases that I inherited that do not have a chairperson for funding, we only have three left. But to answer specifically the question of yes, I'm looking at both evidences, whether a permanent chairperson is sustainable insofar as there will be a continuous number of cases for a full-time chairperson to be referred a year, or whether that is not likely and therefore we better have a system where we see chairpersons form a list of employers, but certainly re-looking and reviewing the existing structure of appointment, fees, paid, etc.
Mr. Speaker, yes, you're absolutely right in relation to the reference to the letter, which you said, was sent to the Gibraltar Bar Council and it was distributed amongst the chamber, therefore I have a copy of it. In that context, he doesn't seem to refer to the possibility of having an appeal body comprising three individuals. And the reason why I say that specifically is because that does feature in an electoral commitment on behalf of this party. So can we confirm that it will be the intention as part of the proposals which will be reflected in legislation in the future or in possibly necessarily primary legislation that every state is going to read, that specific proposal, i.e. the appellate body, by the three individuals, will feature in that.
Mr. Speaker, I do not know whether the Honourable Gentleman has had the chance to consider the letter that I have circulated, but if you were to look at the third paragraph, the last line, it in fact says, the intended effect of the reform is to simplify the investment tribunal process, including the appeal process. So therefore, we are in fact looking at that manifesto commitment as well.
Exactly, as part of the simplification procedure, he's envisaging
control of the electoral and the public because they have a unanimous contested kind of body. I see. And I also see that we're going to see that as a simplification because at the moment the only other course open to an agreed party is to appeal to the Supreme Court. The main first appointment set out with the intended effects of the reform is to simplify the investigative process. And as part of our thinking currently is that we may even have to come to this house to enact final legislation on perhaps an investigative arrest. Because having considered the English law so far, there is an investigative arrest and then there are subsidiary rules. And given that the reference to investment tribunal in the current employment act is a call for the only related security sector, we think it actually makes a lot of sense to have a separate piece of final legislation that sets out the entirety of the objectives, the effects, and the procedures of the investment tribunal, and also the civil legislation that may cover all the matters. But that is what we are currently thinking, and maybe we need to come to the side careful for the next final legislation. I wish to stress the honourable gentleman that the reform that we are presently considering relates exclusively to the investment tribunal, and I've already written to the chamber to say that at this stage we're not considering any other changes to the employment law, but simply and exclusively on investment tribunal reform.
Has the government, in relation to that last answer, that course of advice, has the government adopted the position? I haven't had the opportunity of reading the proposals made by the Supreme Chamber of Commerce, but I have had the opportunity of reading the reaction, the report of the action by the unions in Indonesia. And I think one of the concerns which they have and they are absolutely dead against is the possibility that potential containment will have to be, for the part of the filing process. And has the government adopted a position specifically in relation to that? And the reason I ask that question is relevant from the answers just given, because it has been imposing upon one of the procedural aspects of the DFL.
Mr. Speaker, I first place to stress that since my appointment as Minister for Employment, I've only been able to take my thesis of this very recently, but I can tell you categorically that the question is whether a complainant will need to file a plea to start an investigative process. The answer is categorically no.
May I say to the Honourable President, there is a limit of the extension which we can ask supplementary on the reform. We've asked for a date, the control is going to be done by the summer. But we mustn't be so carried away in discussing here this morning the actual reforms. That can be the subject of a separate question on the agenda paper, of course. Question number 3, the Honourable G. Davidson.
The Prime Minister for Employment provides details of the quarterly average of unemployed libertarians for the last quarter of 2014.
On to the Honourable Minister for Building and Employment.
Mr. Speaker, the quarterly average of unemployed libertarians for the last quarter of 2014 was 268. It gives me great satisfaction to be able to report to the House that thanks to the unthinking efforts of the former Minister for Employment, the Honourable David Sherman, the lowest unemployment figures since records begun was in December of last year when the figure stood at 248.
Question number 4, the Honourable J.J. Nettles.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for Health and Safety say what health and safety procedure is implemented by conscious operations as a driver
when using blasting machines and ships at port in order to ensure that no adverse effects occur to the environment and work external monitoring procedures to ensure compliance with the law is carried out to ascertain that companies using such machines do not have claims and might damage the marine environment given the type of hazardous contaminants that blasting has.
I want to thank the Minister for Building and Employment.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to discuss together with question 6 and 8 for 2015.
Question number 6, the Honourable J.J. Mason.
Speaker, how many Minister for Health and Safety teams say, and how many occasions have the factors and states have inspection duties advised complaints, site visits and action investigations in the shipbuilding marine repair industry sector during 2014, broken down by the categories above mentioned?
Question number 8, the Honourable J.J. Mitchell.
The Speaker, the Minister for Health and Safety says, the factory inspector has inspected recently the drivers arising from complaints made by the residents in the nearby area and in favor of Parliament with a statement of their
I'll answer the Honourable Minister for Business and Employment.
Mr. Speaker, with respect to the Honourable Gentleman, I'm more comfortable in the House that procedures implemented by private companies that may operate as a driver while conducting an operation. What I can say, the Honourable Gentleman, is that all work that gives us our education in accordance with the Safety Systems of Work Policy Document, in accordance with ICO 9, 14, and 18,000 accreditation, and in accordance with the relevant domestic legislation. I can also say, the Honourable Gentleman, that I'm informed by GIPDOC that blasting is conducted by GIPDOC employees and not by subcontractors. The Health and Safety Inspectors also collaborate with the environmental agencies on matters related to blasting. The inspectors have accepted two meetings in respect of the shipment building, marine repairs industry sector during last year, and the Health and Safety Inspectors have not visited the dry dock as they have not received any complaints from residents. I am advised, however, by the Health and Safety Inspector that the Environmental Agency has received a number of complaints.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could I ask the Honourable Minister whether, in relation to the Sands blasting operation that takes place in County Town, at least in 2014, whether the company, not just the tax company, but the company directly operating there, do have a plan supervisor appointed every time that the Sands blasting takes place in the city? And in relation to having a planning supervisor appointed, whether the health and safety inspectors have been notified every time that such an operation takes place.
Mr. Speaker, I do not have the answer to your questions.
So, Mr. Speaker, I do have a number of supplementary questions in relation to these by. It might be the case that the Honourable Minister himself may not have a kind of detailed answer to my specific supplementary. So I always wonder whether you have to take time and just simply write to the Honourable Minister detailing, because I fear that in the same way he might have available to him there the information, he might not have information to my other supplementary questions, which really emanates from this type of question.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman will know we have corresponded in the past as a result of questions that we have from the past. So I am aware today, more than happy to reply to any supplementary that you may have.
Question number 10.
Question number 5, the Honourable J.J. Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The former Minister for Health and Safety supervised the health and safety statistics for the month of December, and this is not available in the Crown Register at the time most of the questions were notified.
On to the Honourable Minister for Business and Employment.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I will now hand over the set of statistics to the Honourable Minister.
The schedule consists of 5 pages, so that we can go on to the next question and the next to come back when I can get my eyes.
I think this is one thing necessary because last night I took notes of that information and already been uplifted to the Crown Register. So in a way, the information is now coming through, I already have it available to me. And there are, I think, 2 additional issues that I would like to raise if possible with the Honourable Minister. One relates to the savings related to monitoring activities. I mean, the Honourable Member looked at the table both for December and November. He will be able to see that in December there were 11 inspection programs, thanks to the construction industry, 1 to I think in great sense, both apart from December, and in relation to November, there were 16 to the construction industry. The one thing I would like to point out to the Honourable Minister, given that, as you just said, he's only trying to see into his new portfolio, is the same kind of comment that in the past has made to the 2 previous Minister for Home Safety. And that is that there is a constant previous position by the health and safety inspector only to target, not only, only Minister for One Year, mainly to target the construction industry. And this is probably due to the fact of their own health and safety inspector background and qualification. I think there is a disproportionate amount of time dealing with the construction industry, and what I would urge the Honourable Minister is to deliberately have a discussion with inspector, and that so that we can have a more fair balance of inspection right across all the industries, and not just mainly on the construction. So the construction in both, I think, needs to be good for all the industries. The other point I would like to raise with the Honourable Minister is in the table of occupational reportable accidents. If the Honourable Minister goes to the December figures, he will see that there was 1 major accident, I think in the first place. This is a construction industry? Yes, in the construction industry. I wonder whether the Honourable Minister has been, this has been highlighted to him, and whether he can give him a brief account of what happened as a result of that major accident in the construction industry in December.
In the first place, the safety and the difference between is absolutely correct to say that the statistics are not available online when he went to decide a question or apologize to him for that. I made it clear to my minister that statistics have to be updated regularly, and we have to make sure they're ready for all of them, especially people that are prepared in their system and time to answer the questions. And if all of those things would have realized that we can have in fact that they're well ready for today's session. The Honourable Gentleman would like to look at why there seems to be a huge statistic for many in charge of the construction industry, and the Honourable Gentleman would like to look at this in order to have a more balanced inspection or a more balanced review of all industries. I still would please learn that in fact one of the first things that I ask on taking on being made responsible for the portfolio is to say, to ask how in fact we achieve that, how we are able to have a balanced, continuous review of all industries throughout the entire year, and therefore what resources
in terms of infrastructure and human resources may be required. So I take on board the comments made by the Honourable Gentleman. I will hopefully be able to update him on progress in that respect during the coming months. As to the question on the accident, in fact, we're looking for question 7, which we have not yet got to, or is that a separate question? The only question we're talking about last year about the major accident report in November. Yes, of course. I think question 7 has not been read yet, and in fact, like I said, now I'll say it later, but I think there is a mistake actually in the question form, because I might have been looking down the pages, and possibly that the mayor has been working in the electricity supply industry, which is not a very set up question as I did last month. It is in the same time for the related industry as opposed to that. But the question has not been read for hundreds of services. Actually, the other gentleman is correct. When he did formulate the question to me, there was a supervisor hours. There was no business site. It was the fact that the mainly report, it was that the website was actually reflect the reality before we now ask him where question number 7 is.
Question number 7, the Honourable J.J. Nettles.
Speaker, can the Minister for Health and Safety please provide the House with a statement in relation to the major accident reported in the November 2014 statistics of the government website, stable HS2 in the electricity supply infrastructure, and say what is the consequences of emanating from such incidents?
I am the Honourable Minister for Business and Employment.
As I was informed about it from the Honourable Gentleman, I was informed that there had been an administrative error with a particular statistic. The major accident in question is related to a food transport incident and not a major electrical supply incident.
Mr. Speaker, normally when I've asked in the past questions in relation to not minor action, but major action, because obviously minor action, you're not going to have a complaint here or the staff of here in relation to as much as that. Usually it's major action, so normally in the past, the minister has stood up and said, well, this happened, the minister could get by, the inspectors went there and they observed that a number of things were not run properly. And a small brief statement normally done by the minister. I don't know whether the new minister, now that he says he's actually prepared with a brief statement as to the nature of the major accident, what was wrong, what lessons have been learned, in order to avoid such a thing happening in the future. If you have information, you can provide it to the House. If you haven't got information available right now, again, I can write to the Minister and perhaps you can find that information later on for
me. Speaker, if all of those elements of life that in fact the accident relates to the divorce marathon authority for which it was responsible just a few months ago, I will be on exactly the same situation that I was when I asked the question to him then about the fact that the NATO has to tell a report. This is one of the preliminary reports which has been taken out to the new relevant minister, which is Minister Isla. Without putting to the head the answer that I gave to him in respect of that question two months ago, you will recall that the preliminary report is sent to the minister, and that the question of whether the NATO does report the report is entirely a matter for him and not for the relevant minister. But on the last occasion, I did write to him with a summary of the report, the recommendations, and the actions taken. So while the mayor on the relevant minister, I have no doubt speaking on behalf of Mr. Isla, that I would be willing to do the same.
Question number 9, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, further to the answer to question number 127 of 2014, can the Minister for Sport inform the House if he has now identified and agreed upon the potential facilities for use of the Volta Rugby Football Union for the playing, teaching, and development of the sport?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Sport, Culture and Youth.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 10.
Question number 10, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Further to the answer to question number 485 of 2014, can the Minister for Sport say if any potential alternative facilities have been identified for use by the Gibraltar Cricket Association in respect of the rigid facilities for the playing, teaching, and development of cricket in Gibraltar?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Sport, Culture and Youth.
Mr. Speaker, no further facilities have not been have yet been finally identified for the Gibraltar Rugby Football Union. Other than formalizing with the Ministry of Defence for them to have easier access to use the double star pump facilities at no cost to them. In relation to question 10, no further facilities have been identified for the use of the Gibraltar Cricket Association other than already stated. That is, the Gibraltar Cricket Association will be able to use the Europa Point sports ground as it always has, and we are working with them in order to refurbish the Brighton Dimension so that we can share this facility for teaching and developing cricket in Gibraltar. The latter is an improvement to what they had before we came into government.
It's a man my question in both questions 9 and 10 is therefore where they identify potential facilities. The Minister has addressed what facilities there are and the one world comes whatever image of access you can achieve if you go to camp. And of course the use of the Dyson Gymnasium, which under my current access was mainly used by the Bachelor Association, could be easily directed to the specific association, but about the potential facilities, can the Minister compromise on that?
No, Mr. Speaker, the answer is that no further facilities have yet been identified. Therefore, the answer is no. But also to say to the Honourable Member, it wasn't an easy task to get the guy from him. As you well know, the guy from him was solely used for basketball, was given to the Basketball Association, and we have negotiated with them because they saw that it could be used by our sport, and we went with the people who were willing to use it for indoor cricket, which is a vast improvement for the development of young children. And therefore, this is an extra thing which we've done for the cricket, but as to the facility, to identify, we haven't been able to identify this main design for the record.
Okay, so as far as the Minister is, the Minister has not, in any of the duties, not said that potentially or possibly we could, I get a feedback from some members involved in those courts, yeah? That the Minister has identified the place that may or may not materialize, but there is potential in it. And the Minister confirmed that is incorrect information due to my
use. What exactly the information that they're giving me, if you can correct it, what I'm also can tell the Honourable Member is that in the Europa Point ground, as I have stated before in this house, that we laid down some tests, which is not only now used by young children, which is a great improvement for young children to play football, the rugby is also using it, and I am glad to say that the cricket have indicated that this summer they will also be using it for the development of sports. actually identifying other areas, the answer remains no further details are available.
When I say given, because it was no other association were able to use it. And therefore, it was the sole use forever. And one could say if the keys were given to them and they were using it. No legal crossover was given to Gaza, that's for sure. So there wasn't a legal license or anything passed on to Gaza. Gaza has always used that as if it were there. And you will know that because the GFLA has very, very little, if any, input in the Galatians in Egypt.
Well, certainly speaking, the GFLA has an input on the government, and one would have been estimated, but you say that he's concerned not to say that GFLA should have to answer to the results for the time. Thank you.
Is there a question, Mr. Speaker?
Question number 11, the Honourable E.J. Haley. And the Minister for Sport now provides the details missing in his answer to proposition question number W85 of 2014. The sale with team association has been allocated to use the business to sale of food facilities in the sector of cabinet and expand their activities. Answer the Honourable Minister for Sport, Health and Youth.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, now I'll hand over the Honourable Member opposite the special provider providing information that was missing in the answer to written question, which I would like to thank the Honourable Member for highlighting this too, because it was a written question, and when he got the answer, he highlighted that to me, and obviously the answer was missing. And I now hand over the first answer.
Question number 12, the Honourable E.J. Haley.
Can the Minister for Culture provide updated details of any types of grants awarded so far pertaining to the financial year 2013-2015?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Sport, Health and Youth.
This is Peter now hand over the Honourable Member opposite details of all cultural grants awarded so far as a payment to this financial year 2014-15.
So as you said, we perhaps we can answer the next question and come back to this one again. Question number 13, the Honourable E.J. Haley.
Can the Minister for Nations provide details of all work, together with a breakdown of effective steps, undertaken at any health-related site, since the answer provided to question number 732 of 2014, stating by whom these words were carried out?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Sports, Health and Youth.
Those who would answer question 732 of 2014, further work undertaken at various sites increases the cost and work carried out in. I'll read it to you very well. Site at the 7th Battery, work were cleaning, general repairs, and paint work. The contractor was a site, and the amount was 4,000
£39.60.
That's the best to do with the next question on the Senator, and then Mr. Hayes can come back again to you.
The Senator, please, question number
14. Question number 14, the Honourable J.J. Newton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government say if any funds from the Ministry for Sport, Culture, Heritage and Youth, or through the Chief Fashion Letter Centre, has been spent on advertising in Spain, where television, radio, or press? And so, please provide the amount in 2012, specifying the name of the media outlet and the date or date of each individual payment.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Sport, Culture and Youth.
Mr. Speaker, the answer to this question remains the same as those of a similar nature relating to questions asked to the Chief Minister in previous parliamentary sessions. That is, the Haitian government of the Vote continues to believe that sharing information of this nature publicly is not in the public interest of the Vote.
The reason why I've asked this question is because in the previous question that the Honourable Minister just stated, there was an exchange between questions and answers, supplementary questions and answers. In which, in fact, the Honourable Speaker was supposed to say that some funding emanated from either the Ministry or the Chief Fashion Letter Centre. So, this is at the start of those statements made by the Honourable Minister, and now posing the question. So, there seems to be an acknowledgement of truth on the part of the government, through the Chief Minister, that such training has materialized either through the Ministry or the Minister of Defence or the Chief. And all I'm trying to do is to see whether I have this confirmed what amount and to what particular entity is concerned. So I'm not sort of trying to open up any new ground, just trying to have an open place to do so. Mr. Speaker, I do not recall when the Chief Minister said that because I have the answer to Parliament to this. And that is why I've answered the question in the manner that I have. And there is no mention of the fashion that we sent to our board, and the answer remains the same. Yes, but can I just ask a question related to the government policy? Because the Honourable Gentleman, in his answer, portrayed the situation of this government policy where exactly the same for all government ministers, but actually, the Honourable Minister Costa has provided us with details of advertising in Spain, in radio, in the press, in Spain, in relation to their ministry. What is the difference between Minister Costa's approach, which I commend to the House, which is open, transparent, and providing us with that information, and the approach of the Honourable Gentleman in relation to his own ministry? I just don't understand what the difference is. Perhaps the Honourable Gentleman might want to explain that to you.
The decision is a simple answer. No, I'm not going to explain it because the Chief Minister actually did that, made the explanation, and this discussion was already had when the answer to 462 of 2014 was answered by the Chief Minister. So, therefore, I'm not going to get into the same debate now, as it has already been had here in this house.
Well, Mr. Speaker, can we at least answer this without identifying, I'm not asking him to identify who the recipient of any funding has been, but can we at least confirm or deny that there's been funding by his ministry in relation to Spanish press and radio? In relation to the subject matter of this particular question, in fact, in a second.
Mr. Speaker, the answer remains the same as I stated at the beginning. from the speaker. I just think he doesn't understand the answer. If you seriously start words with, I think it's quite a bit of a problem. I can't remember exactly what it is. But there is clearly advertising in that registration in relation to King Baptist, a very easy to say to me, well, look, it's public knowledge that this particular radio station does advertise King Baptist. What is the state secret? What is the big national point of public importance, national interest? And the honorable gentleman effectively gave me the wrong answer to the question.
And Mr. Stephen, where did he answer the question himself? Why am I going to now go? He said that he's listening to what's going to happen to Paris, and he hears that there are pastors talking faster than the community. Why then ask the question? You know the answer. Why do you want me to tell you? I don't see other foreign pastors coming to Paris. I don't see him to those radio stations. So if he does and he heard it, there is the answer.
Mr. Speaker, of course, one of those gentlemen is a model of patriotism for not listening to quite a few followers, a radio station in which his government advertises to Boston. And I have to say, Mr. Speaker, that is a contradiction in whatever I've heard of. But Mr. Speaker, well, at least perhaps he can answer this. Is the advertisement of King Bastion on Spanish radio the only advertisement that his ministry faces in the Spanish media? And if you can say that, you can say, well, no, it is. I'm not talking to you further away, but if you think you might ask that question, so at least say to me, yes, that is exclusively what we do, or no, there are other areas that I'm not telling you.
And if you see that, when you say that I can predict myself, I don't think that there is nothing to do with nationalism. It's to do with how hard work that I do, and I haven't got time to listen to your foreign publicity pilot. And that's the issue. Because if I had time, I would be listening to foreign publicity pilot, because I would be listening to music, and I would try and see which type of music I could bring to the successful music festival. So therefore, the premise always of nationalism and all that is just an invention of it. As to being advertised in other media, well, it seems that if he listens to radio and reads all these newspapers, wherever they are, it is exactly where King Fashion Lady Central Limited advertises.
So, Mr. Speaker, with respect,
and this reason, I am not. The point I cannot quite understand, there might be an argument in relation to public interest of not giving me the exact amount that the government advertises in this particular radio station or that particular newspaper. To provide that information to divorce it in relation to the divorce media, but it might choose not to do so, despite the fact that the Honourable Minister for Press did provide that information in a question that I asked. And quite understand that there might be an argument, a difference. But I'm asking him, where are you advertising? Well, how does that be of national interest? I mean, if the answer is, well, you should find out by reading every single newspaper in Spain, it actually is an answer. It's not a reasonable answer that a reasonable minister coming to this house, discharging his obligations as he must to the people of Gibraltar in providing reasonable information, is the same. It's not possible. It has a kind of question, one more time, a final time, so at least for him to answer my original question. At least the area is. Where the government, through his ministry, is advertising in the Spanish press. No, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I please ask you, the minister, if it is a question of a repetition of some of the figures provided in his system. If I look, for example, the figure coincides and then the system coincides, if one looks who was hired on the day. And the police and her school for that, it was 12,000 pounds. And just six lines on the day, it's the same name, so it's actually the same quantity. The entry has been duplicated as a simple human medical error, or that two payments to do the third one, the one for the day, the 3,000 pounds, the rest of the grand total is 27,000, and the rest corresponds to one academic year or to more than 1 year. And the same thing happens when we come to bring the board, book grants, and say to me, book grants and so on, it's exactly the same figure. Is it because there were 50% payments in each attendance, or does the minister not need time to double check the cost of the simple repetition?
Mr. Speaker, I can explain the Andrew Felice's, this is for Dan Felice's issue. And if the honorable member remembers, the chief minister announced that there were these two cultural grants given to individuals who were like Felice cultural persons or councillors. And therefore, it could well have been that it was given before the financial year, because it goes from April to January, and it was agreed in the previous financial year, the first £12,000, but not paid until this financial year. So it is not quite a double up. As to Tracy Lee and Tony Gold, I will check whether it is a double up. So, because if I remember correctly, the Dan Felice, we gave her an initial £3,000, but then it was agreed that she would get as a grant, so that they had an education grant, but a cultural grant, because the ministry had announced it, and therefore they probably invoiced the previous years, or at least some part of it from the previous year. Like I said, as to Tony Gold and Tracy Lee, I will check on this.
Yes, and this is a good decision that one. Can I then come back and hold him and thank him to speak up to about 695? And also that's been 13 different dimensions of Grand Festival, and so Grand was at Portugal. So, is that just a reference to Portugal, or are they going to stand alone? We don't quite know what that was. Well, you know, the other best day is the Grand World Cup. The people working, so there always seems to be a difference. So, what was the original first? You know, you're adding something, you're adding in, adding it to what was in front of it, or is that what the connection of the line of the case where you bought the savings bank? I mean, why you bought the savings bank receiving any grant? I think there's a very little connection to that, actually, for the sake of the rest of the society, the minister could enlighten us on that. Likewise, four lines from the bottom, a printer has been given a grant. I think what the minister means there is that the printer was paid in respect of, ready to say, printing the book. But printing the book, there's no entity who to the book was. I will accept Mr. Sassita will leave it at any time in time, and I don't want to get any questions. We could come back to this house before we are going to see it. Otherwise, we don't have that to the record, and I do need it, especially when it comes to public funding for the future, to see where the money is going to be
spent. Yes, Mr. Speaker, thank you, Honourable Member, for highlighting these, and I will be questioning all those. For example, the thing, like the Honourable Member rightly says, Charles Filippo Prince, it must have been somebody who wrote the book and has actually compacted or done it through Filippo Prince. And obviously, this list is the check or the CD has passed to
completed. And likewise, we will devote to the front, and probably we will not know how to account for something there, and the management here. But it seems not clear, and therefore I will go back and ask for to who or which entity I'm to explain to. Thank you.
Question number 15, the Honourable G.A. Peter.
Can the government please state whether it has paid any further expenditure in respect of the mega conflict since this question is last asked? Answer the Honourable Minister for Sport, Culture and Youth.
Mr. Speaker, since my last answer, a further expenditure of £21,825.30 has been made in respect of the voter music festival.
Is that a metal or a good?
That is not as good as you if you're saying that as they've been counted out through the revenue now, it hasn't. It is expensive, purely expensive. Next. Oh, yeah, Mr. Speaker, I could have got the one thing that the minister just mentioned that the 29,875 was paid with respect to the new festival. That is a total different festival to the one that appears first in the schedule that we've done in the 1912, where it says the voice of world needs a festival of 15,500. I'm not correcting the feeling they are totally unrelated.
Yes, sir. They are completely different. Two different entities are to organize two different things.
Question number 15, the Honourable Mr. Alan Elohim.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for Health explain the protocols involved to access the DHA's eating disorder programme and what the programme entails?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
Mr. Speaker, you will first of all allow me to say what the process is to hear the clerk announce the Honourable Member of it. We have Ms. Stern clearly, somebody who has had to answer the question in the person that we have with us. Yes, sir, I'm so glad to see you here. So, Speaker, referrals from the doctor are normally made to the dietitians and the psychologists simultaneously, and the patients, whether adults or children, are advised and or treated accordingly. And there's a good communication within the team in order to deal with this.
Question number 17, the Honourable Mrs. Alan Elohim.
Mr. Speaker, I'm also sorry that it's a pleasure to be asking the Honourable Mrs. Elohim good questions again. And thank you for a very kind word. Mr. Speaker, further to written question number 232, can the Minister for Health state when exactly the DHA review report will be published?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
Mr. Speaker, the prepared answer is a bland no, sir, but I think I can explain that with the permission. I have explained in the past that we were not going to publish it until we have reformed the structure of the DHA. That process is now fortunately complete. So it's now a question of doing so, and we are preparing publish it. There's no other impediment than that, and whereas I cannot give an exact date, it will now not be long because it's now a question of actually getting it out. I thought that might be helpful.
Question number 18, the Honourable Mrs. Alan Elohim.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for Health say if the one possible model of food distribution and or the providers of the VA service is or are being considered for food distribution at St. Bernard Hospital?
Honestly, the Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
Mr. Speaker, they say we are not considering that at the moment.
Mr. Speaker, so can the Honourable Minister confirm that the bulk meal service is a model that will be followed and closer food will be taken?
This is the Speaker. The intention is with the most of the new kitchen facility on site that we will now be phasing out the closer food service and revert to the more traditional, and I believe better, bulk food, which is served on the spot, so to speak. We are hoping to be able to pilot this in one of the wards in advance of the new kitchen, just to make sure that we've got the office things and that's all we know that. So that is the intention.
Mr. Speaker, just a couple of supplementary questions. The pilot will be started, I believe, at John Ward. Can the Honourable Minister say when the pilot will start? And also, is the intention to offer a choice of different foods, which is different people have different dietary requirements? And also, will the food prepared in the new kitchen be providing food for other social services, and for instance, for children and so on?
Mr. Speaker, as part of the last one, yes, if we continue the new kitchen facility, we continue to provide a variety of locations with the food. The other question as to when the pilot will start, I couldn't say exactly. I do know that it is going to start in January, and it may well be about to happen. We need it just to keep some of the equipment, which is clearly different equipment than one that has been used before. And I can't recall the third question, if you just repeat that. Yes, there is an intention to, when the new facility comes in closer, then the intention is to provide the ability to receive food by the patient.
Question number 19, the Honourable with the Iron Roseman.
Mr. Speaker, service written question number 242. Can the Minister of Health say what the prostate cancer GP and consultant surgeon protocols are now that the new clinic has been established?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
Mr. Speaker, the protocols are described in the studies that are now hand over. And as we discussed in these studies, they have been produced in conjunction with the prostate cancer support group.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. While I wait for the schedule, if the Honourable Minister could confirm whether PSA testing will be used as a screening program. I understand there is controversy about the use of PSA systems because evidence shows that it produces a lot of false positives. So it may be unreliable. If the Honourable Minister can reassure us that that is not going to be introduced yet without very close careful consideration.
Mr. Speaker, no, PSA will not be used as the screening method, because as the Honourable Member has pointed out, this can be false positive, and without proper counseling, particularly, can create a negative alarm, although clearly PSA is an indicator. And therefore, these tests will be carried out in consultation with the doctor and with the patient being fully informed as to the consequences and the different things that can cause an elevated PSA test. There will be some patients who will be monitored with regular PSA, but as I say, this is very much a patient, by patient issue between the patient and his medical physician.
Question number 20, the Honourable Mrs. Ian O'Hanlon.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister of Health say that the speed of the Bonita Pass was prepared to buy the GHK and MRI machine, but this was rejected?
I say the Honourable the Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
Mr. Speaker, not in the time since we were elected. Certainly, not that I am aware of, it hasn't come to me.
Question number 21, the Honourable J.J. Nichols.
Speaker, can the Minister for the Environment please provide an explanation as to why there was a sharp drop in the collection of glass and paper cutlery in February 2013, as shown in the Divorce Waste Management Plan 2013, page 33?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
Speaker, I will answer this question together with questions 22 and 23.
Question number 22, the Honourable J.J. Nichols.
Speaker, can the Minister for the Environment say the amount of hazardous waste sent to Ganasur was badly spent in 2013 and 2014 in tons in relation to waste blasting material containing dangerous substances?
Question number 23, the Honourable J.J. Nichols.
Speaker, is the Minister for Environment aware that the Ganasur facility plant in Los Barrios is being investigated by the Spanish Prosecution Service and La Junta Andalucía for alleged serious breaches to Spanish environmental laws, and what independent verification that the Minister Lurie has that hazardous waste from the water to this plant is being safely disposed of in accordance with European law?
Honourable the Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
Mr. Speaker, the figures for the collection of glass and paper cardboard are based on the figures of recyclers exported to the recycling facilities in Spain. These are summed up for each calendar month. While the figures for February indicate a sharp drop in the collection of the recyclers, this can be explained by there being fewer recyclers exported in this particular month and not necessarily a decrease in the amount of glass and paper cardboard recyclers deposited locally by the community. It could be that being a certain amount, there were fewer deliveries in February, and therefore it's an artifact of the way it's calculated. In answer to question 22, the total amount of hazardous waste sent to the Ganasur was badly explained in 2013 and 2014 concerning waste washing material containing dangerous substances was checking whether it's a cover or 3,444.844 tons and 2,265.58 tons respectively. And in relation to question 23, we are aware, although not directly, that there is currently an investigation into the plant. However, neither the Ministry for the Environment nor the Environmental Agency, which is the competent authority for the export of waste, have received any official notification from the Junta de Andalucía, Secretaría de Medio Ambiente, Dirección General de Prevención encargada del Plan Servicio de Residuos y Calidad de Tierra, that the Ganasur facility in the Barrios is being investigated or is in breach of European law. Should the facility be found to be in breach of any applicable law, the Ministry will then take appropriate action.
Thank you. In relation to the answer provided by the Honourable Minister to the last question, question number 23, the reason why I chose this particular question is because after doing a quick search from Google, I found out an article, I don't know whether the Minister has got the same article that he disposed of, in the Spanish newspaper El País, which came out on the 8th of January 2015, basically where it stated out under the title, in the delay of further control of what is done out of control, whereby there was a Spanish prosecution service and La Junta de Andalucía was completely concerned about many environmental laws being breached by this particular company at this particular time. In fact, the article goes on to say that the Junta de Andalucía is, I think, proposing, perhaps not answered so far, a fine of 6.12 million euros to the company as a result of breaches to environmental laws. So, given that we have clearly a duty of care in relation to whatever waste we export to this particular plant, as we do to other plants indeed, it is important that we follow these as much as we can possibly do to ensure that we have
access disposal. So if the minister is not aware, perhaps that he's in the details of the actual, that in good sense to the bottom and ensure that he is a waiver in relation to the safe disposal.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, we share the same concern. And I haven't seen that particular article, so I would be grateful for a copy, although I am aware. And in fact, I can say that officials from the Department of Environment have inquired to officials in the Indonesia or Islamic, and we are in fact in conversation and are waiting more information.
Okay, just to say that I'll make it for a copy right now and I'm going to the Honourable Minister, please.
Question number 24, the Honourable J.J. Mitchell.
Speaker, can the Minister for Environment say if the new waste treatment facility to be conducted will produce any of the following? A, electricity and its safe amount. B, portable waste and its safe amount.
Given that the tender process is ongoing, this information will become available once the tender is awarded.
Speaker, I think on board the answer provided by the Honourable Minister, but what I cannot reconcile, at least in my mind, is that given that when I look at the waste management plan, which the Honourable Minister gratefully sent to me. It is a plan that was issued in January 2013. And if the Honourable Minister goes to take things away, after talking about the future waste management plan in the world, it would seem to say Darwin has required that the same station has the capability of all the things to take away. And then it goes on to say the tender process was started in February 2013. When the army was carried from the Central Journal and from Union Division to the member of the contract, the tender statement is now closed. And the tender submission is now being reviewed and assessed by the government. So something that has happened for this particular process to have been stopped for some new reason. So that's the minister informed the House of what's happening here. Secondly, without any problem at all, Mr. Speaker, the tender process resulted in two companies who came up with some of the conditions that had been required, but neither was found to fulfill. And therefore, that tender was not fulfilled. The companies were informed, and the tender was then reissued. And we are now in the closing stages of a second tender. There have been more expressions of interest, and they seem to be providing what we require. So that's when the process stopped and we issued a new one. And I can confirm that one of the requirements of this tender is that the proposed treatment includes for one or several of the following, which is largely what the member offices have asked: generation of electricity and or production of potable water. I mean, I think it was a typographical error. The production of biodiesel, the production of syngas, and the disposal of ad hoc waste, including soil and sewage flow. But we are now quite advanced in the second round of tenders, because the first one did not provide one that would have fulfilled these environmental requirements. And that is the reason for the debate. Just for my own benefit, I'm just doing it right. Back in November, I think it was November, I asked the question, how was the waste, the municipal waste treatment plan proceeding, and the Honourable Minister, Mr. Tsai, said, we are currently, then, in November,
in the pre-qualifying questionnaire stage. Now, as that stage is now finalized, in what stage are you right now in relation to the tender process? When is that likely to close? When is it likely that the government is going to consider, or the procurement office consider, the different bids in relation to the tender, and whether the government should oppose to the view that the target date for completion of the plan is still as stated in November at the end of 2015. So let's take that out. So the additional possibility, or perhaps a little bit more, because the question was whether the treatment plant will produce the following. Therefore, I don't have the time schedule in front of me, so I'm talking for many, and maybe 1 or 2 weeks out of date. We have gone through the full qualification. A number of companies, I pick up a figure, I think it was 7, qualified and have now been to the goal level. Some of them, if not most of them, have been to the gold test and to look at sites and so on. And I think we are now just weeks away from the final stage. The intention is still, because of the technology that we're looking at, to, I'm still hopeful that we will be able to deliver by the end of this year, if not very early in the next year. But obviously, it's something that is all subject to all the usual nuances of this kind of process. But we are certainly further along than we were in November.
Thank you, Speaker. So, to round up, can the Honourable Minister provide the House an idea as to when the planned process of the tender process is going to be completed, so that the government will be able to know which of the particular bids funding would be able to provide either electricity for the warfare, by a vehicle or finger. By when are we going to be in a position to know when this is likely to emerge, so that I don't have to come every single month and ask the question to the minister person, but I'll leave the question to such a time as the minister may think the process has completed and therefore I can ask the relevant question.
I'm not directly involved in the tender. I don't have the answer, but I'm happy to provide it. And if you call my office or write to me as a lesson guide, I would be very happy to inform you where we are exactly in the process, rather than approximately, which is all that I'm able to do.
Question number 25, the Honourable J.J. Nicholson.
The Speaker, further to the supplementary answer given to question number 643 of 2014, can the Minister for Environment please say how the collection of the data with regard to fixed is in British devoted territorial water is.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
The Speaker, the collection of fish stocks located in British Devoted Territorial Waters is still in its early stages, but nevertheless progressing well. The Department of the Environment is in regular contact with local fishing clubs who are providing valuable information on fish stocks. This will be used to develop a fishing database together with the data that will become available as part of the fish tagging program. One of the key developments in this area has been the creation of a fishing working group, which met on the 16th of December 2014. The fishing working group forms the ideal platform to discuss any issues of relevance to the sustainable management of fish stocks, including the provision of fishing indicators.
Could I perhaps press the Minister a bit further? I mean, you did say in the answer that the collection of the data was in several stages. That's what he said, and that in fact what he answered, I mean, when it was back in November as well. What I want to try and put together is a picture where we're able to see by when the data will be sufficient to be analysed
suggest that this issue has been sufficiently great to be analyzed and conclusions drawn from such data to be able to inform the government as to renewal of licenses in relation to certain in the various categories within the legislation. So, can you provide us a bit more information as to when the data is likely to be concluded so that our analysis can take place?
In order for data to be reliable, they have to go on for a long time. I would say years more than months. However, as soon as we have a few months worth of information, we can take some preliminary views, although they would not find a statistical test. This is the beginning of a long process. However, in the same way that we use that term, clearly, it will allow us to make much more informed decisions on the potential use of our water for fishing in every kind of way. But it's very early days yet, and I can't commit myself to this.
There's a lot of work to be done, and I think that on board. But is the minister confident that by the time the renewal of the fishing licenses have to take every 2 years, the data will be collected and long analyzed before it comes to the decision in the renewal of such licenses?
Well, I just think that in 3 years' time, two things will have happened. One is that we have sufficient information at least to take a view, even though clearly for statistical significance we need a long term and other data. And the other thing, I hope that I'm still Minister for the Environment, so I can answer questions on this particular topic.
Question number 26, the Honourable J.J. Minister.
Since the Minister for the Environment says that the new fishing regulations are now coming into force and it's not right.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
As Speaker, in our introduction regulations 2014, came into force on the 1st of January 2015.
Question number 27, the Honourable J.J. Minister.
Following the favorable statement made by the European Commission in dismissing the latest complaint made by the Spanish political party with regard to the reclamation of the East Side project, can the Minister for the Environment say if this is now the last complaint to be considered by the Commission or if there are more in the pipeline?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Health and the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar is not aware of any further complaints that may be in the pipeline.
Question number 28, the Honourable J.J. Minister.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for the Environment and Health say on how many occasions has the Environmental Agency inspected companies in the shipbuilding marine repair industry sector during 2014, broken down by companies and banks, and what the finding of such inspections have concluded?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 29 of 2015.
Question number 29, the Honourable J.J. Minister.
Claimants for the Environment Ministry eventually the Environmental Agency has inspected recently the drivers arising from complaints made by the residents in the nearby area and in search of filing the statement of their findings.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment and Energy.
The Environmental Agency inspects Shiprock, the only shipbuilding and marine repair company presently operating in the Gibraltar.
is possible to carry it out to ensure compliance with the waste license issued under Part 5A of the Public Health Act and the members of the public log complaints on alleged nuisances. The breakdown of the visits undertaken by the agency in 2013 for both waste licensing issues and general complaints logged by the public is provided in the schedule that I'm now handing over. And in answer to question 29, which is very close to the statement of the findings, that has been included in the schedule that I'm handing over.
Question number 30, the Honourable G.J. Bettini.
Can the Minister of Fields and please provide details of the total cost of the Sunday beach service?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, the cost is broken down as follows. Construction of forms and breakwater, £7,220,799.82. Beach replenishment, £1,451,590. Additional signage supply, £117,737.56. Design cost, £39,088. Environmental impact assessment, £51,211. Consultancy supervision services, £25,710. Theodore and cost, £41,449. I trust that the honourable member will agree that this is money very well spent.
Question number 31, the Honourable D.J. Bettini.
Can the Minister for Tourism provide details of further advertising expenditure in relation to the Tourism Department construction question number 474 of 2014?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Quality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, the information requested is contained in the schedule being handed over to the Honourable Minister.
Question number 32, the Honourable Mrs. I.M. Alouzman.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for Social Services say when he's offering why the inquiry report will be published?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, a statement in respect of the report of inquiry into the death of the Alderman should be made later today by the Chairman of the Minister.
Question number 33, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
The following warning from government press release number 504 of 2014. Can the Minister for Housing provide details and relevant information pertaining to the engagement of high disability guard patrols in residential areas where the development programme is in progress, together with details of cost and what coordination arrangements have been made with the World Water Police?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, following on from government press release 504 of 2014, a security company was engaged to provide this service. Laguna State, lucky to say the most personal state at the first stage, between the hours of 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. The cost of the service is an average of £10,300. The arrangement in terms of coordination with the World Water Police are the same as that of any other security company with no assistance or special arrangements.
The company that has been constructed in the Honourable Lady Research Parish 3 housing estate. Are there separate guards for each individual estate, or are they serving on a patrol basis, just one patrol and taking the intent to go around the three estates?
Mr. Speaker, I understand some guards for estates, although there are separate guards for purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Maybe would the Honourable Minister please take it upon himself, if possible. It seems that, based on especially the leaders who felt that the decisions actually were there, and a particular incident could not find the guard and cause the road to go to police, to try and see how they could best contact the guard. And the radio of the police said that at least the operation had been the same, and that they said that they had no details and no information in that respect. So I'm asking the Honourable Lady, can she please take it on board that perhaps some notice can be put up within the estate that we would need to contact the guard, a contact number or an attorney, and that the road to go to police control room at least has that information possibly. It was an inspector in the field where we went to something like a family lease, and it wasn't for the city of Nashua to guide the police in those two numbers, but the residents found that they were the answer to the problem, especially when the art and normal working hours was not available. Could you please give an invitation to the prime minister?
Question number 34, the Honourable E. J. Daly.
Can the Minister for Housing provide details of all the remaining refurbishment work, which should be carried out at Alameda Estate, together with estimated dates when these works will be carried out?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, I can confirm that external refurbishment works have been successfully completed to Kingsway House and most recently Redstone House. The remaining blocks will be done, but not in this financial year. The Honourable Member will have to wait for the report to be published.
Question number 35, the Honourable E. J. Daly.
Can the Minister for Housing provide full details of much of financial and written up in respect of on page 1 pertaining to government rental homes since the answer provided to question number 745 of 2014?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Quality, Social Services and Management.
Mr. Speaker, working with respect is ongoing with the Office of the Financial Secretary.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Does the Minister have any details of what plans have been written up since the answer to the question?
No, I don't, Mr. Speaker. That information hasn't been provided in the past and the reason for that is that we need to know what it is.
Where is the other chain of information, Mr. Speaker? I'm not going to say where can I obtain information in respect of the sum of money that may have been written up with where the source of the issue of them. I'm trying to find a way to where I can say a legitimate question with people.
Mr. Speaker, I understand it may be that because it hasn't actually been written up as such, but that work may be ongoing with the financial sector. So even having people with me, because my partner and friends have actually given it to me in the field in question, but they may be that some may be looking up in the future for the minutes or something, but I would do with that political level, something that's a financial question.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. The question goes to the Minister for Housing. As you may not have responsibility for the sale of the story, the question that was posed, somebody in the government ventures takes responsibility and ownership of the question and provides the answer. I don't understand why the government is chosen in this occasion not to provide the answer, because I don't think that it's reasonable for the minister to stand up and to say, well, it's not my own responsibility, I don't know, when the question, when she forms part of a government.
Because what I've just said is that I do not think that any funds have actually been written up. But it may be that they may be put in the pipeline, and therefore they have been considered by the financial secretary. It doesn't mean that it's a reason to write them off as an invitation. It may be that it's a reason to write something off an invitation, but as such, Mr. Speaker, I have no details, therefore no funds have been written up as an
because the folks in terms of no deeds and risks and no reasons that. And in fact, what she's really saying is, I don't know what the answer to this question is, but somebody
but somebody, surely the government budget must know. Now, it may well be that the answer is no monies have been lifted up, which is not the answer that the Honourable Lady gave originally. It appears what she's saying now, although it was a terribly second step answer, but maybe what she's saying now, there hasn't been at the moment anything lifted up, but it's being considered by the government board. That's the answer. That's the straight answer that the Honourable Lady could give. But what the Honourable Lady can't do is come to this house and talk about ifs and buts and maybes and not take responsibility for providing clarity in relation to an answer of questions, really, that ought to be answered by the government.
I don't think my answer could have been any clearer. As the Honourable Gentleman, Governor began to say only, then, Mr. Speaker, I don't think I can make it clearer when I say, first of all, I haven't said that there are any matters being written up. I have said that, to my knowledge, none have been written up, but that matters are ongoing. I don't know how much clearer I can make it to the Honourable Gentleman. Maybe you've understood what I said because you've just said the question. Can you do that? That is a solution.
The Honourable Minister is saying that the Office of the Unsecretary of the Treasury have not been able to provide more information in order to answer this question.
Mr. Speaker, as I understand this, nothing has been written up specifically, and that's very true. But it may be that there are things in discussion ongoing, as I said in my original question, that working in the process is ongoing with the Office of the Financial Secretary. And I've not been given figures of anything that's been written up. And therefore, in that basis, I understand that nothing has actually been
written. I've been ongoing, so you mean that no final
decisions
have been taken? Yes, the final decisions have been taken. Can I just come back, because Mr. Speaker has absolutely correct. Look, the position is very clear. Let me say one thing. My intervention really is obviously, the answer was provided for the 22nd of there's been another week, and there's been a little bit more time available in case information that was not available at the time that the answer was first declared to become available, but that is what I was trying to elucidate. And I understand that's exactly what there, because of course, the position is very simple. If yes, there has been something that's been written up, or no, there hasn't been. If either a week ago or 2 weeks ago, the position was nothing has been written up, then that's the answer. The younger lady is putting it on the side of the state being reviewed, and I don't know what's going to happen in the future. But now says that she is giving us, I mean, the earth and the back of the lady, now it's my understanding. I want to get clarity from the honourable lady that the information that she has been provided from the civil service, not her understanding, but the information is. As of the date of this question, nothing is being written up. That's the position.
I don't know what the Honourable Gentleman gets the word. It's a fact of media, but none, I think, quite the lady is not three times. Mr. Speaker, none. But because I'm being absolutely confirmed, I'm also saying that matters are ongoing with the financial secretary. How much clearer can I be, Mr. Speaker?
Come back to question 51, the Honourable Mr. Wilson, Mr. Burton, supplementary.
I just commend the Honourable Minister for being so transparent and providing this information and following in her predecessor's sister. And perhaps we can advise the Honourable Minister of Sport to do the same. There are certain recipients of funding, which in the second of which I would wish to ask further questions. Some of them are very obvious. What they would see like the double speed they do. And it's not just because there happen to be in some of their artist section, but if you can elucidate what the nature of the advertising has been undergone in relation, for example, to the payments that have been made to La Verdad Magazine and La Tribuna Madrella. I think they appear on at least three or four occasions, and they see about the same. Amount of money, about £4,000 in each case.
Mr. Speaker, in respect to La Verdad Magazine, payment is made for editorials and advertorials, and for La Tribuna Madrella, this is in relation to front page cover letters and news and issues.
Question number 36, the Honourable E.J. Davis.
Can the municipal housing provide details in respect of all expenditure incurred? This is the answer to question number 747 of 2014. In respect of contracts awarded for making empty homes suitable for reallocation, stating the home payments were made, how much has been paid, the number of residential homes pertaining to its payment, as well as indicating if the services were either for repair work or cleaning services.
I answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Quality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, the answer is in relation to four residential centres. One to ESS at a cost of $6,250, one to AJEC at a cost of $11,080, one to PA Construction at $11,395, and one to MMS Services, $8,150. And all services contracted with the repairs, $9,015.
And Mr. Speaker, would you, for the Minister, have any sort of relevant details what type of repair work were this?
Mr. Speaker, I understand that these are in relation to the service contract.
I should have been a bit clearer. Is it possible for electrical planning
roof? Can I say this to the Honourable question as a teacher? Because this is the kind of question that we have from meeting to meeting. Okay? Where did you do, if you want people for the repair work, for placing in question? Either for repair, I quote the Honourable Minister, you sign the paper of what the repair work costs. And then he covered. The Minister will then bring that information to the House.
I think the voting board will keep it up because we do, although I welcome the lady of the new Minister for the Housing and this suggestion you might find as well. The previous Minister did know me and I always said it's kept up with this information, but I will take your voting board and keep it.
Question number 37, the Honourable E.J. Davis.
Can the municipal housing provide details of how many tenants require urgent expansion from their homes? Since the answer to question number 748 of 2014, indicating the reason why the date when urgent expansion became necessary and the date when the tenants were able to return to their homes.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Authority, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, one tenant has required to cancel from their home. This is the various dollars. It's due to work, and the person has been out of the property since the 12th of January, and there is no such date for the tenant.
Again, Mr. Speaker, I do use words to provide details for the tenant, but I'm going to be able to take a word for them.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know the exact details of the work, but I understand that the reason the work was required was due to flooding. Anything that may be needed to give you
that. Question number 38, the Honourable E.J. Davis.
Prepare to answer question number 177 of 2014. Can the Minister for Housing provide updated details of the comprehensive review pertaining to the Housing Works Agency and the municipalities?
Honourable the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Quality, Social Services and Housing.
The technical staff of the original student to transfer to the Housing Works Agency have now transferred to consolidate housing works.
But
first of the world.
Would the minister know that is that complete the whole exercise, or are there any other matters still being considered by cabinet, by cabinet, as though that had been informed before?
Mr. Chief, so far as I can tell, I think that that's probably complete. I'm not aware that there are any issues, and maybe there will be other issues. Mr. Chief, if you can speak to observations here, then I think that the answer is complete. Maybe the thing you know, do not come to find another data.
Yes, I appreciate Mr. Chief, that I do think that so the concept could be a completed fact. I would like to believe that there are other matters, because the word comprehensive review is the one that was termed by the government. So, is the Honourable Lady aware of any other matters contending within the review?
As far as I'm aware, Mr. Chief, I think that's the view. As I said before, I'm sure that things will do not come down to time. And that is the general policy. You know, things are always reviewed because if things can be improved, things can always be looked at. So, you know, a review never stops. It's always ongoing. But in terms of the sort of the bigger picture, I think that is complete because we've now had quite a significant two steps within the whole of the Ministry for Housing.
Would you have a relationship to give them more time to help within the matter? Of course, as you see, but because comprehensive. You know, one sensible thing would be that more than just the transfer of the remaining senses of tax. Is there any language there? If the minister has been denied, if the minister has been proposed, the question there, or is it said that already say that the matter is now closed?
As you know, my usual respect that we have a so comprehensive. But of course, if one of the gentlemen would like to ask me a question of any of the transfer, then we should.
Question number 39, the Honourable E.J. Davis.
Can the Minister for Housing provide accurate information, inclusive of details of grades and dates, in respect of any housing work agency employees who have been A, retired, B, transferred, and C, dependent, either from or into the housing work agency, since the answer provided to question number 311?
I'm the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, I will now hand the Honourable Member the information required.
And we move on to question 14. Question number 14, the Honourable E.J. Davis.
I would like to answer the question number 523 of 2014. Can the Minister for Housing provide updated details together with estimated completion dates in respect to work still to be completed and make our application?
I'm the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, I've informed by my colleagues, the Honourable Minister of One in previous answers to Parliament, in question 523 of 2015, and written in question 156 of 2015, that this is to be stated and verified at midnight of the state of my country.
If you see the reason why I was laid off is because the last time the Minister of One told me that the next time I would be. The situation was ever about when we would, although the barriers had been set, they still weren't operational. My understanding as of yesterday when I last went there is that the barriers are still not operational. So, can we have any sort of message to that effect?
Mr. Speaker, I'm informed that the works are complete. So, I have to rely on the information that is provided to me by the citizens. I'm informed that the works are complete. I will go go and check whether it's sufficient or not is the honourable member suggested it or not, but certainly the information we have been given is that we're talking.
I don't want to use the wrong language and see that I don't forget, I affirm that it's provided us in other places. Realize that this is pantomime time, when something for filling in low zones and new people, but perhaps the honourable member can be more specific, perhaps if we have a specific share, be more specific about the information that we have on the election show and clarify it with the minister. I can be specific, I feel in the speaker that I basically went yesterday and the evening of this meeting to see the value of the operation and I secretly set myself on the one that was the
if we are the honourable minister is taking that information, and I would hope that the two can be her concerned.
Mr. Speaker, if I may, the last time I asked this question, and also as the honourable member says, he's actually right, the work I completed, the barriers are not installed. The only thing that was pending in my time was the actual handing out of fobs and agreement and situation and what we needed to do in that respect, and that is what the end of the day. To answer your question, the work has been completed, especially the logistical matter of, you know, who gets the fob and the agents of the permits and how, you know, the thing will be produced and structured. That was the only thing that was pending, but the work has been completed. This is a good idea. I mean, the fact that the work has been completed as far as the Ministry of Health and that they have been able to fix the problem. But I do start my question by saying, well, what's the answer? And the answer given in question 2023 was that they still have to finalize the disease and other problems and so on. So I'm asking, you know, confirmation that has now been completed or is it still ongoing? I don't think I can agree with it in any way with the speaker.
Actually, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give the question is very clear. The question says, in respect of what seems to be completed at these harbours, and the answer in relation to what, and my colleagues are very helpful, qualifies is yes. Is the honourable member, not specifically because he's aware, perfectly aware of the answer given on the last occasion, is his question is in relation to the operation of the barrier as opposed to the work, then maybe the question could have been clear and directed at the operational function of the barrier and the work. Insofar as the question asked, and the question asked is in relation to the work and whether work has been completed, the clear answer to the clear question is yes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
But I also believe that the speaker is equally clear that it is further to the answer given where that might be another reason. Otherwise, the speaker would be reading in the matter of order that is not a valid supplementary. I am referring to an answer that is given. I know perhaps the speaker realized and meet behind the chair later and you advise me on the correct way of imposing his words in the same way the answer that everyone knows and should be.
Question number 41, the Honourable E.J. Higgins.
Funding the Minister for Health and say how much expenditure has been incurred in respect of legal costs relating to the eviction of quarters and gardens and to homes is the answer provided to question number 531 of 2014, providing a breakdown showing the number of homes involved and to whom payments were made.
I'm to the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Media.
Mr. Speaker, we have been requested.
Question number 42, the Honourable E.J. Haley.
Can the Minister for Housing provide details for the real to his test of unpaid rent pertaining to Diamond Venture Homes as of 31st of December 2014?
On to the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Equality, Social Services and Housing.
Mr. Speaker, the total of arrears amount of rent is at 31st of December 2015 is £5,279,068.59.
Question number 43, the Honourable Dean Davidson.
Can the Minister for Report provide details of the amount spent on marketing of the certificate for 2013-2014?
On to the Honourable Minister for Traffic, Transport and Technical Services.
due to the same strength and dramatically unofficial visit. In 2013, 2014, was £70,093.08, and this can be broken down as follows. Expenditure in sales advertising was £19,284.27. Expenditure in sales for membership amounts to £1,410, and expenditure in sales for accommodation, travel, and marketing amounts to £49,298.81. The total, as I said earlier, is £70,093.80.
Mr. Speaker, can we tell you, I think it's categorizing the breakdown into two, can you tell me which of those three is the candidate identified as being responsible for the £10,000 increase in terms of what we estimated would be the expenditure as a part of the budget? The forecast action for that financial year was £60,000, which is itself represented for the £15,000 increase from the previous year. I just want to understand the behavior of the three categorized elements which are here and which one is most responsible for the overwhelming expenditure.
I've just been invited by my colleague, the previous minister, who responded to the report, that he believes it to be the Hong Kong trip. Other than that, I would not be able to give him any information myself personally.
That information which we will have available if I were given this question in the future, and to do that would account for the accommodation and travel to the head. Did you mention membership? As one of the answers here, that correctly, and if so, can we perhaps be a bit, can give me more information related to it, what that is actually?
Mr. Speaker, under that head, membership is included, and this is even an example. In fact, there are only a couple of membership details. That's one is for the International Bankers Association, that was membership for 2013 2014. And there was another with the National Harbour Master Association membership. So this is just the annual membership for a few different associations, of course, in the charter.
And this is the leading going back to the schedule of events that was given to me, and the question number 39. One small point, and that's the way that the convert in of the convert out of the agency. The table says the convert and the two grades are the main location where there is a convert into the agency or from the agency out of the agency.
I'll ask the same question and I'll give that to the clarification, but I think that on the basis of in the paragraph below, we have some sort of assuming that these people have been suspended out. In case these people are not suspended out, then I will revert to the knowledge of them. So my understanding is that they are suspended out.
Question number 44, the Honourable Jude Overseas.
Prime Minister for Financial Services provided the name of the director to Lambert, whom he said he had met from one of his visits to London.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Financial Services and Gaming.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Director Clark Hill, as I mentioned, had met with Karen Reese.
Speaker, the reason why I asked this question is he not said in the last session, or in the November session, told me that Margaret was quite high target on the third in Gibraltar now, as a result of its involvement in relation to the GSA campaign. And somebody, I was going to join Doc, and somebody listened to saying Doc Storm, and I just wanted to give him the opportunity
to explain the position. I look at Mr. Henry Boyle. Is he involved in magic? The reason, he is, so I don't know, okay. The reason why I've been in the dark, personally, and somebody's answering it for me, is because he is actually, that's where I met him, at the airport, when I was part of the sort of, the receiving part of the UFO guys, as a result of the campaign. And that's where I met him. I mean, I've had a known him, but then he mentioned that he would actually have a connection with me. So I just wanted him to give him the opportunity whether Mr. Boyle has any connection with magic, as I understand that he's also very well known to the honourable member himself, and whether there was any, as a result of that connection, with any connection related to him having a conflict with the specific issue.
Yes.
I'm obviously in relationship with magic as long before I came to college. And by understanding is that Mr. Boyle is a consultant about it and certainly that's the work that we do. You've had a role by them, but it's a consultant with them once we've been taken. But I think, as you rightly said, he was involved in the GSA World Ready program, as I said, long before I came into this program. And there is no connection, as a result of that, connection that was just between himself and Mr. Boyle, as to why then the magic has been appointed to the other three of the government's websites. And I think that it was a two of them one. And from the center, one kind of have an involvement, not a people, but they have an involvement in the relationship with the government websites. So can you just spell that and give it a good. But given that I understand there is a relationship, I think Mr. Boyle is a personal friend of the government member, but that wasn't the reason why they went to Margaret for the purpose of enlisting the services. He was an answer to the one
of those. Mr. Boyle is a personal friend of mine and a valued professional. And in the same way that I use my professional judgment of the involved lawyers, including partners and members of the court, and they're part of the society, and even this guy, right? It's that professional judgment that he uses to really use it all. And I mean, my professional knowledge of Mr. Boyle is that he's too clever what he does. I don't have it, and consequently, I just continued what had started before I arrived here in Goyle, and there was no such way to make the choose to fix from what we wanted to do.
Question number 45, the Honourable DJ Rotini.
Can the Minister for Financial Services provide details of the cost of the central operation of water government website?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Financial Services and Gaming.
This is the Speaker, thanks to the work of the Parliament. The website has been completed by EdiTech Lab and Lovers, working together on the project. The cost of EdiTech for the build integration, testing, and training across government of the system is $38,440. And the cost for magic to the design of AI architecture and content review is $37,040.
Question number 46, the Honourable DJ Rossini.
Can I go back to a previous question, if I may? I'm just going to say, I haven't listed it myself. So I'm going to say why I'm honourable, and then saying that the book that I'm working on has yet not gone well. Is that correct? Because it's just been twice, right? I think it's probably the most expensive sentence in terms of the other, if you want to go to the relative to the other website, as soon as the morning is supposed to find this one, it seems much higher than the figures that I report. I think the figures were in the region of £9,000 and £10,000. But in this case, just magic is at a threshold of £35,000, and then we have the £37,000, and we have the other company, which is £38,000, but all told is very close to £80,000. It just seems very expensive for a website which has yet hasn't come along.
The government website is a huge website.
and consequently, every aspect of it is very much greater than the much we look at the finance of the website, which is minute by comparison. And so we always knew this would be more expensive to update and address. I would say that from memory, there are other websites not carried up on that, which are much more expensive than the previous ones you mentioned, and I think even this one, if I remember rightly, but I'd have to confirm that to the member of it. So it is more expensive because it is a huge project undertaking. And the reason for the delay, it was going to be launched some weeks back, it was going to be launched last week, I'm told it's now going to be launched tomorrow or earlier next week. The big reason for the delay was last holdup. I mean, the thing was just a day, and then the ministry was settled, so it all had to be revamped before it was launched. It took a couple of hours. And what was held back at this point in time has been the huge volume of statistics that need to be ensured that way of those lives are fully up to date. And that's an enormous amount of work, which, in order to launch it with current information, up to information, is taking a little longer than we would have liked.
Could the Honourable Minister say what other functionalities the new website is doing over the old website when it was initially
released? No, Mr. Speaker, I'm not a person, I have to admit from the sightings we've had of the draft website, the function seems to be very much easier to follow, easier to find. So that the ability of the site, I believe, is far easier access, you may agree or not agree, but in terms of the technical aspects of the website, I don't know if that would be much assistance. I know it's under a new detail system which other governments have used, including the US government, which provides added security, which in this day and age is important. The next part of the work that Ali has been for us, but I'm not certainly from the right answer that I've been told myself, and I don't know how I think that would be very much as well.
There
is a separate web website, so this is not a link to it, but once you get rolled out, then I would imagine there will be a link, but I don't think more than that. In other words, I don't believe the new government site will form an integral part of this system. Question number 46, the Honourable G. Davidson.
Can the Minister for Financial Services speak to why the Gibraltar Financial Bank Limited is authorised to carry out services in the UK with details to what is coming down in the future?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Financial Services and Gaming. Yes, Mr. Speaker, Gibraltar Financial Bank Limited has presented into arrangements with providers to have a port code to access the UK clearing system. In order to obtain a port code, GIB is required to transport payment services into the Kingdom, and the authorization has been sought exclusively for the service. There is therefore no intention to carry out any activity other than the service.
Yes, I think Mr. Speaker, I'm very grateful to the Minister for that response. And the reason why I asked the question is because if it is one looks at the Gibraltar Finance you will see that the firm will be authorized to carry out certain activities, and it's much longer than the way that the Honourable Minister had explained to us this morning. Is there any way of knowing that? Is just, I mean, I'm not an expert, is it just the way it has to be done? You can tend to obtain the services, but it's a wide range of services, which is usually like accepting the deposit and lending, etc., which is what the bank is licensed to do in Gibraltar, and each is licensed to do in the UK. There's no way of knowing that, is there?
I'm advised that in order to have the put for that, we require the parts of the payment services, the payment services have an array of things to include you within that passport and rights. What I can tell you is, which is the intention of the IB, is to use that passport and rights for the purpose of the footprint. And in order to have the full credibility and time for the presentation, this has had to be accelerated and arranged in place to finalize it to make sure it's done in time. Thank you, Morgan.
Question 75, the Honourable Dean David Seaman.
Further question is just on page 2014. How did Deputy Minister now advise what the cost of the construction of a car park has been made of the ground?
Answer the Honourable Deputy Minister.
The answer to number 7 of the answer given to question number 68 of 2014.
The answer to the was the details regarding of the case and power park have not been completed, so consequently the cost of construction is not finalized. Is he able to tell and give Jim information as to the developer for this particular project?
The developer is a private entity, which went to the Development and Planning Commission as a funder for the project.
But they do have that information available, they have the name of the private entity. It's public knowledge that it's telling us. But if you have that information, that would go to the Secretary of Health.
I don't have it with me, but we have to remember kind of find this in the public domain of the office of supply, so it is public information.
I think we need to understand this a bit better. I think public announcements have been made in relation to this as well. But I think the cost of the car park is going to be a cost to the government. Is my understanding correct? But what we don't yet have is the price point for that.
Which I'll be giving you questions to the Chief Minister and questions to the Minister for Education and Justice. Okay. And now for his answer to the question.